to Hyperfixation. My name is I'm not ready for the intro.
Queer fandom podcast.
Welcome to Hyperfixation, a queer fandom podcast. My name is Marika.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Cal.
All right, and this week's Hyperfixation is Camilla the Web Series, the first season. We might talk about the other seasons later, but we're just focusing on the first season right now. All right, so did you guys, thoughts?
So first things first, watching it gave me memory flashbacks because the intro sound took me all the way back to when we were living in the Clifton apartment, because I could hear it coming from your room all the time. I was like, wait, why does it sound so... Oh my gosh.
See, I thought it sounded really familiar, and I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah, I told
Cal,
and
then
like,
you told me that, and I
because
like,
Mariko
I
was playing
is,
it in her,
I think
her
that
room.
Is what it is. Yeah.
Yep, that's probably what it is.
Or in the living room, constantly.
It was giving very much, like... Not a read, in a good way. It was giving very much, like, community theater show.
Oh, yes.
Like, I could see this being a weird stage show.
Yeah.
Yes. In, like, not in a bad way. Just
how tall was that one actress?
Sharon Bentley's 6'2". What's his name? Matt O'Connor, who plays Coach, they're both 6'2".
I was going to say, like, they towered over everybody else. I was like... They're like 7 foot tall. How tall are these people?
Well, I think it's like Elise Bauman plays Laura. I think it's like 5'2".
Oh,
so
yeah,
like
that
that's that. Yeah, that makes
a lot more sense. It's so, just like giant.
Well, that I feel like is a good insight to how into this show I was and kind. I haven't watched it in like I don't know maybe a couple of years. I tried to get my wife into it because I was worried that you. That's why when I texted the two of them the link to watch it, I was like, it starts cringe. I was like, it gets better. It starts very cringe because. Liz is like, oh, you're actually going to make them watch it? It's so cringy. I was like, how far did we get? And she's like, I don't know, I think like 3 episodes. And I was like, oh, so less than 10 minutes?
Oh, yeah. Definitely the first 30 minutes were pretty rough.
Yes.
Because I watched it in like a big video.
See,
so.
And I did it like...
He did it with like in a playlist.
In a playlist.
Yes, initially said, they then did just make it so it's just, you don't have to do the like, no.
Oh, no, it still puts it in every single episode.
Oh,
like,
yeah, but it doesn't do the outro as well, so you don't have it.
Oh,
yeah, the outro as well every time.
Yeah.
All right, so Camilla the Web Series is a... single-frame web series from 2014, co-created by Jordan Hall.
2014, that was going to be my guess.
Yeah. I was going to say early teens.
I was going to say, basing on the clothes, I was going to say somewhere within that 2012, 2015 time. Yeah, very much, very much. Some of the clothes were killing me. That one, like, skirt Laura had, that, like, paper bag rumpled skirt,
yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and all of, like, Danny's shirts, I was like, oh,
yes.
Yeah, you're definitely a lesbian in 2014.
Oh, and all the outfits are also very, like, theater kid.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, as you could see, it was incredibly low budget, so I think all of their clothes were just their clothes.
Right.
Mostly.
Just styled. Stuff from each other,
So co-created by Jordan Hall, Steph Okanine, and Jay Bennett, written by Jordan Hall and Ellen Simpson, and directed by Spencer Mabee. Premiered on the YouTube channel Verge Girl, which was eventually rebranded to Kindest TV. The first season aired from August to December 2014.
So was this also actually filmed in a dorm or just in a room of someone's house?
It was a house that they rented. So that was just like one, I think that was one of the bedrooms in the house. So they just... Yeah,
I was going to say, because it looked like a dorm, but it didn't look like a dorm at the same time.
Yeah.
So those
college
are still
housing,
too nice to
Yeah,
be
college
a dorm.
Housing seems right.
Yeah.
I was like, that kind of window, that's not in a dorm.
Well, yes. That
super nice window, the cabinet thing. I was like, oh, they're not putting stuff.
Yeah.
This is too much real-looking wood.
Yeah, patio. Well, because if you notice the... when they opened the door, the like hallway, I think it was just like a piece of like drywall they put there because that was like a fit because it would have looked like a normal fucking hallway and they needed to make it look like a dorm hallway.
Yeah,
so like that's why it's just right there. So yeah, I guess kind of the start of this, it was incredibly low budget. Verge Girl, the YouTube channel, kind of wanted to like pivot into like a scripted series. And so they're like, hey, well, what's the cheapest way to do that? Oh, well, let's adapt something that's in the public domain. So that's why they ended up picking Carmilla. They were, like, bouncing around a couple of their ideas, but then they landed on this one. And they were like, hey, why don't we do this? So that was kind of how that came about. But also, one thing I don't know if you guys noticed that, except for Natalie, everyone is white.
Yes.
That was because they weren't unionized in the first season because it was cheaper to not be. And it filmed in Toronto. So most of the actors of color in Toronto usually got a role.
Why do they also have a lot of gingers?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Like, that was just, like, three characters alone. Right.
I think it was, like, unintentional. They didn't really put, like, any, like, physical descriptions of any of the characters when they auditioned, and then right. it just happened to be that that was what it was.
Interesting. So they had, like, auditions. Like, they paid, like, they were paid. Like, I mean, like, I kind of assumed this was, like, the YouTube group and then, like, had friends that they paid to be in it, or like
help yeah, no, with the they were all like production. They were all real actors.
I don't mean that. You know what I mean. I just meant like,
yes, and it was like, well, because they all are very young. Like I think that like they are like they just graduated college. Not Annie Briggs, who plays Perry. I think she's a little bit older because she was actually also working at a Shakespeare company while doing this. So she was like doing goofy lines for this while also like having to memorize two different Shakespeare plays. So. But, yeah, so they were all, like, ununionized actors, so this was usually, like, their first role, because they never really had, like, a speaking role in something else before this, because then those were unionized. They do become a union in the second season, which is very funny, because every side character they introduce is not white, so it's just like, okay, like, we're like, yep, we're gonna course correct, like, here is every new character is a person of color, like.
How many seasons were there?
There were 3.5 seasons, and then a movie. So there's the first season, second season, and then there is like a prequel season in between 2 and 3, then season 3, and then the movie. And then it was turned in, then it was novelized a couple of years after that. So there is a novelization of the web series based on the novella, which... Okay.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, they added a lot of lore and stuff.
Oh, yeah. And then the novelization is fun because we can leave the womb that we're in.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, basically, kind of that's with our framing device. So we started with Laura Hollis, who's a first-year student at Silas University in Styria, Austria. She's telling us that for her Journalism 102 project, she is going to investigate the weird things that are happening on campus and as vlogs. So there's been some ghost sacrifices, and the library might be sentient, and she's about to tell us some other stuff, but then her party girl roommate, Betty Spielsdorf, bursts in, tells her that she has to come out with her to the party because they've only been in college for 3 weeks, and she can't just be, like, sitting here... I don't want to, like, be quoting it constantly, but she's like, you can't spend all night talking to the internet. So she gets her to come out to the party and saying that, you know, she just got away from her overprotective dad, and she heard that her lit TA, Danny, might be there.
Yeah.
So they then go up. Well, we don't leave the room. It's just one camera that's, like, supposed to be Laura's webcam.
Yeah.
So that...
I think that's also what gave me a little bit, like, community theater, like, stage kind of vibes. Because you could make this a stage play very easily. Because there's one fixed perspective.
Yes.
And, like, I know we definitely saw stuff, like, you know, especially, like, college, actually. I think that's a lot of what this felt like. We would go and, like, see, like, college plays either with you or, like, with, like, our friend Caitlin. Like, so it felt very much like that to me, where a lot of them would do, here's one set, and here's people going in and out of the set doing different stuff. Yeah. So it felt very much like that. I liked that about it, actually. Like,
well, a lot of them said that like, it was almost closer to...
Gave me a lot of nostalgic vibes about... Especially because that was around the same time.
Yeah, it would have been.
So it felt very...
But a lot of the actors did say it was, like, closer to acting on, like stage acting than screen acting, because, like, you're... Like, basically, the audience can see you the entire time. So that's why it's a lot of fun of, like, people making facial expressions or, like, doing goofy stuff in the background.
Right.
Because, like...
And you also have one audience perspective.
Yes, yeah. So it's all, like, right within that. So the next morning, Laura wakes up first. So she goes to wake up Betty, but she isn't there. And she finds a note card that's covered in some sort of goo on the floor. And it says that Betty no longer attends Silas University. So Laura has, calls student affairs. She calls campus security. But everyone's being really unhelpful. And they don't seem to care that somebody has gone missing. So Laura decides she's going to pivot her project to making it about the search for Betty. So she's interviewed some other people who were at the party that they were at, but nobody knows anything. And then the door to her dorm room...
Oh my god, the bad photoshopped pictures.
Oh god.
I don't know if those are intentionally so bad. I think they're supposed to be, but like, that like became a gag, but I don't know if initially it was so bad. Because they're really, really horrible. And, like, it was 2014. It's not like they had to be that bad.
Right, yeah,
So, yeah, so a girl bursts into Laura's room and says that she's Carmilla and she's her new roommate. She has a letter from the dean of students that says she lives here now. And Laura immediately hates her and then has some video proof of how bad of a roommate she is. She keeps stealing her food and then hanging out with different girls on Laura's bed. So Laura decides she's going to get back at her, and she decides... to use her soy milk that's, like, marked with her name on the fridge. She pours it into her cereal, but it's blood. Yeah, and the way this kind of went, because they were... all the episodes were between, like, 3 and 7 minutes long, and they would air... well, not yet. But they... basically, everyone ends on a cliffhanger, so... anytime there's, like, a little cliffhanger... I don't know what I'm explaining. Anytime I'm pausing my notes, it's because that's how the episode ends. But I just don't want to say, like, and that's when the episode ends, or I'm going to be saying it, like, 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Luwin goes and gets her RA, Perry, and then Perry's best friend, LaFontaine, to try to kick Carmilla out of the room. And it seems like Perry's kind of not okay with, like, everything being all, like, weird and crazy, but Laf is much more practical about all of it. They're a biology major, and they want to take some samples. And Laura asks if she can go to the dean, but they are definitely like, no, you definitely shouldn't do that. And then Perry tells her that Betty will probably be back soon anyway, because that's what happened to the other girls that went missing. So then we find out that there were two girls who went missing, but they reappeared a few days later but had no memory of what had happened. And kind of while LaFontaine and Perry are kind of arguing about this, we kind of get that there's something going on between the two of them, that LaFontaine wants to be called LaFontaine now, but Perry keeps using their dead name. So
I was about to ask that, because, like, I know, like, that's brought up a little bit later, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was also, like, building stuff on The Sims when I was watching this part, so I don't remember all of the dialogue. but, yeah, I was going to ask, is this... So, because I did notice at the beginning we were using she, her.
Mm-hmm.
For, and then at the end, though, there were a few people that said they, and I was like, okay. Is that what we're... Is...
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say. Like, I'm going to use they, them for LaFontaine the entire time. Because this is kind of like a journey that this character goes on kind of throughout this season, a little bit of next season.
Okay.
So it's...
Because they don't explicitly mention it, but I did notice there was a...
Yes. So this is kind of like a thing that's going on through this. Like, there might be like an explicit conversation. Oh, I think LaFontaine has to explain it to Laura's dad in season 3. I think is like there is like a full on like they do have to explain it, but like it slowly like transitions to the point of like even in this season there are like the character is credited as S. LaFontaine, and then in the like the subsequent seasons they're just credited as LaFontaine.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's like this whole. I think it was always intended for this character to go through this, like, full entire journey, too. But Kay Alexander, the actor, actually was also going through this journey at the same time.
That's kind of also what
I was wondering. They started, like, they were, like, unsure about their own gender identity. They started playing this character, and then it helped them realize that they were non-binary, too.
Right.
So, like, by the end of it, we're, like, fully non-binary.
Okay.
So this was the first time I ever saw a non-binary representation in anything.
Yeah.
Because it was 2014, so.
Yeah.
Really known about.
Definitely wasn't in like the normal, even in like normal queer circles.
Yeah. Oh well, I
popular
think
queer circles.
Even like
so
this, like the web series got mentioned. I think in GLAAD's, like Where Were We This Year? They're like their report on like all media and representation. Like this got mentioned because there were like maybe 4 non-binary characters like total in anything.
Yeah.
So
because back then it was all My Digital Escape and it was just the emo kids kissing each other constantly.
Okay, so I'm glad we had that little conversation about LaFontaine because I did want to point. So like if. The other characters are using she, her pronouns. It's not meant to be, like, anything malicious or something. It was just,
that's kind of what I assumed.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I assumed.
Yeah. So Laura wants to go talk to the two girls who had been kidnapped, but she's being super intense, so Perry says that she will go talk to them first. Carmilla returns and tells Laura that the soy milk thing was just a prank. Laura threatens that she's going to go talk to the dean, but then Sarah Jane and Natalie, the two girls who were kidnapped, come to talk to Laura. So they explain that they both went missing from different parties, but they reappear 2 days later. Carmilla's kind of being a bitch through all of this, and it's not. She starts humming the X-Files theme song at one point.
Yeah.
They were both kind of having weird dreams before the party, but then Natalie gets a bit too freaked out, and so then they both leave. Carmilla insults Laura and tells her that, you know, she might as well not bother researching any of this anyway, because it's not going to lead anywhere. So Laura gets kind of sad for a second and is like, college is really not turning out to be what she thought it was going to be like, but she thinks that everyone deserves better than this, so she's going to keep, like, looking into what's going on. So she decides she's going to post her videos, which she's only been recording up until this point. And then Carmilla kind of smiles at this because she thinks it's going to piss off the dean. But right when Laura posts them, an alarm starts going off, and Laugh and Perry come running in to tell her that there's a town hall meeting. And this is the end of episode 6, and they posted the first 6 episodes as the premiere.
Okay.
So, uploading unauthorized material to the... Silas Ethernet triggers a security breach, and so a town hall meeting was called. Laura's kind of mad about this, but hey, she ran into her lit TA, Danny, who's the one who's played by Sharon Valerie, 6'2". So, and I love how they handle the height difference of this, that they just kind of...
They don't.
So, her head is just, like, kind of cut off.
Yes.
So Danny's kind of impressed that she's still making another video. And Laura tells us that Danny is the vice president of the Summer Society, which Laura very, like, unsurely explains is an outdoor social club for girls' athletics, which we kind of find out.
The softball team?
No, they're actually the Amazons.
Oh, okay.
we find out through later on this, they're Amazons.
That's funny.
Basically. So, they kind of recap what happened at the town hall, and it was mostly that Laura was just getting in trouble for the videos because the dean is saying that these missing girls is just a rumor. But Danny stood up because one of the members of the Summer Society has gone missing as well. And then the guys from Zeta Omega Mu start saying that they're going to start doing escorts for certain girls on campus that they find hot enough. And then an argument breaks out between the Summers, the Zetas, and the Alchemy Club. Somebody starts throwing fish, and the Dean decides to end the meeting. Laura kind of tries to flirt with Danny, but she's a bit, like, too awkward about it. But Danny agrees that she'll help with the project. So she then leaves, and then Laura's Zeta Omega Mu safety companions, Will and Kirsch, arrive. So Laura's kind of struggling to get them out of the room. Will seems to kind of be the more threatening one, and Kirsch is just coming off as really dumb, which he admits that he is very dumb, yeah. And he wanted to be with Laura because she's in his English class, and he thinks that...
She's smart.
Yeah, and she can help with his homework. I feel like he's kind of the most community theater-esque. And, well, this is still him, we're in the, like, cringe... I ended up, like...
I didn't like Laura.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah,
honestly, later, she gets better, but in the beginning, I felt like her...
insufferable.
I felt like her performance kind of sucked.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning. And, like, honestly, maybe it's just because she was the one that was talking most.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that could easily be it. That she just had more screen time, so it was more obvious.
And she had to be this kind of, like, vapid, annoying character, yes. Kind of. But, like, I think it does get a little bit too much. That, like, lessens over the...
Yes.
A little bit. Over the course, but, like, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Carmilla comes back.
I think probably the best performances were Danny and Perry. I think, like, performance-wise, yeah. They felt most like real people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
A little bit less... maybe that's because of their their slightly less screen time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who knows?
So Camilla comes back. She's kind of mad that the two of them are in the room. And she kind of gets mad at Laura for that, but she says, like, she doesn't want them here either, so she kind of beats up Kirsch a bit, bites them, and then they leave. So Laura apologizes about the town hall meeting and that it was her fault, but she isn't going to stop making the videos. So Laura's continuing to work on the project with Danny, but Camilla is also, like, there and keeps getting very annoyed with them. So we find out that a total of four girls have gone missing, like Sarah Jane and Natalie, Betty, and a summer sister named Elsie. Sarah Jane and Natalie have reappeared, but nobody else got that weird card. And they disappeared from four different parties, but something at each of the parties was provided by the alchemy department. Camilla does chime in and be like, the alchemy kids aren't threatening, there's no way they could have done this. So they decide to question Natalie again, but she's gone to like full party girl mode. And they all kind of... Oh, yeah. Okay. This is when I said then I was, like, literally reading my own note, not part of the recap. I feel like this is the first time you can really notice of, like, it being more of a stage thing because, like, everyone's making, like, eyes at each other and doing stuff in the background of this episode.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so in the next episode, we see that Sarah Jane has also gone, like, insanely party girl, and she's now dating Kirsch because he promised to take her to some party next week. Laura then looks into what Betty was like before college and realizes that she wasn't a party girl either. This takes her a while, but so Camilla's asleep and then wakes up around 5 p.m., Camilla flits with her, but in a little bit of a less aggressive way, and then she leaves. So we find out that Betty was actually Elizabeth Ann Spielsdorf, her high school's valedictorian and a mayoral page. I love that just being one of those weird Canadian things that, like, snuck in of, like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. So Laura realizes that whatever's happening to them started before the kidnapping, and then the dean comes to Laura's room looking for Camilla. So Laura, Perry, and Laffer are in their room while Camilla's being yelled out in the hallway. The dean says that she went out of her way to get Camilla into Silas. Perry thinks they're all being a bit childish for being all excited about this. Camilla comes in kind of upset, and Laugh and Perry leave. So Laura tries to comfort her, but she isn't very good at it. Camilla's disappointed the Dean somehow, but she won't explain to Laura what it is. It seems like they're starting to get along for the first time, but then Danny bursts in, starts saying that the Alchemy Club wasn't really helpful, but they have been surveilling every party on campus, so they have a flash drive of photos.
Just questioning the legality of that in general.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of... They're supposed to be creeps. So, in here, Laura does stop Danny from being, like, too mean to Camilla. So, they keep looking through all the photos, and they realize that Camilla was with the girls at all the parties before they disappeared. So, Laura has decided she's going to start keeping her webcam on, like, all the time, basically, to spy on Camilla. And then Danny bursts back in because a turf war has started between the Summers and the Zetas, and she wants to make sure Laura is okay. Kirsten also bursts in. They get into some fight, and Laura breaks it up, being like, how in any ways is keeping the campus safe? This is when they're both standing with, like, Laura in the middle of,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the hiking.
Yeah,
this,
yeah,
is very funny. There's then a cut in, because Laura's gone to bed because she's keeping the webcam on the entire time. So she checks back the footage, and because she had this, like, weird, realistic dream, and it felt like there was something under her bed. She says a dark, prowling thing without a face, and then there was a little girl crying, and it felt like she was drowning in blood. Next episode, Laura starts telling us that she's been having these night terrors for a couple of nights. She's worried that it's similar to what Natalie described. And now she knows that Carmilla is involved somehow. So Carmilla comes in and says basically that she had the same dream that Laura had or something similar to it. She says she can get something to help her sleep. Laura's kind of mad that now that Carmilla's starting to be nice to her, but she's clearly evil and is kidnapping people or something. Yeah, Laura creates a little another montage to show us that, like, Carmilla's some sort of supernatural being or something. So Carmilla comes back and gives Laura the bat charm bracelet thing that wards off dreams. She's really sincere about it, and that kind of freaks Laura out. And then there's some, like, actual not very mean flirting.
Mm-hmm. Is this just me talking a lot?
No, you're good. Well, I mean, like, the beginning of this is so, like, set up.
There's
right?
a lot,
you know
a
what
lot
I mean?
Of setup and, like, a lot
so
of
so it's, like, a lot of things I have to say about it don't really matter so much in the beginning, because the beginning
yeah.
is just building to
yeah,
like the main plot of what ends up happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I feel like that's the only reason why I haven't been intercutting much.
Okay.
Is like there's so much that like I have to say that I think's interesting like later on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like until like we get the reveal, it's like oh okay,
yeah.
You know this all this stuff we know where this is going.
Yeah,
you
I
know.
It felt goofy like including some of these details, but I was just like yeah, I guess like it may like the Alchemy Club stops mattering like
yeah.
after
mm-hmm.
the last time I mentioned that, but they seem like a main suspect of this like first
right.
part. So. So Laura is now worried that Carmilla either actually likes her or that she's her next victim. So she hides the charm under Camilla's bed. Laugh comes in to, and then Laura kind of explains everything that's been going on. The two of them decide that they're going to take their evidence to the dean of the faculty club, but they're not going to tell Perry about it. Once they get back, they look kind of beat up. Perry and Danny are now there, and they look freaked out about what they did. But Laura did swipe a photo of the dean's special counsel from 1954, and hey, it's Carmilla. They then went to the library after dark, which you're not supposed to do. And then something chased them out of the library, but the library catalog was really helpful. And they found out that about every 20 years, Laura, with a stupid anagrammed name, shows up at Silas and a bunch of girls go missing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you mean Carmilla?
Yes, Carmilla.
You said Laura.
I know, I keep switching their names for some reason. So Laura's thinking out loud about what this could all possibly mean, and Laugh is like, well, duh, Carmilla's a vampire.
Yeah.
That is how that episode ends. But once we start the next episode, it seemed like only Laugh had pieced together that Laura is a vampire. Carmilla is a vampire.
Laura's
Laura
a vampire.
Is, so,
and I watched a different show.
That is the reveal.
So Laura's worried that she's her next victim, and that's kind of what like every rational person is being about this. But Danny's all is more concerned by the fact that laughs at Carmilla was making seduction eyes at Laura.
Yeah.
So Dan is perfectly fine with just killing Carmilla, and then Perry, as the RA, is like, guys, we can't just plan to murder a student because LaFontaine thinks that they're a mythical creature.
Yeah.
So, but then they realize they can't murder Carmilla anyway, because if they murder her, they're never going to find where the missing girls are.
Yep.
So they have another idea to use Laura as vampire bait. So Danny and Perry really don't like this plan, but Laura's kind of fine with it. Will, Kirsch, and a seemingly very, very drunk Sarah Jane and Natalie come in to invite them to the peace offering luau they're having, because I think that turf war has ended. Kirsch also wants to talk to Laura about her pod people theory, because he's worried about, like, he's like, this is kind of fun, partying this much with SJ, but it's, like, all the time, like, this level. So he's
yeah.
like, oh, I'm worried now. Kirsch says that the Zaders would be willing to help take down whoever is behind making the girls go missing. So Laura's nervous about setting up this trap and how she's going to be all sexy about it. So that night, and that I do find this montage, this sexy montage, incredibly cringe. I even
oh,
found it, like,
God,
so
yeah.
cringe, like, now, and I was like, God, I was like, oh. I was even like, God damn, this acting is horrible. And I was just like, God, I like you a lot.
Was it the acting or the writing?
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's a low-budget production, right?
Extremely.
Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's that, right, it's bad. Like,
yeah.
And there are moments where it's like, oh,
hey,
gosh.
You know what? I can say this. Still better than Madame Web. We saw it this weekend.
Oh, I know. He was texting me about it.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it has, I don't know, it has some charm to its badness.
Yes.
It has, that's kind of
like
what
Madame
I mean.
Madame Web.
But, no, that doesn't, I guess it does have a little bit of charm. But that's a different type of charm to the badness.
Yeah.
This
that's,
is more
that's
like
all gays in the theater loving this movie
yes.
kind of charm.
This is more like authentic, like, charm.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that's why I was like, the community theater. Like, you could tell people care about what's happening here.
Yeah, and I mean,
and, like,
I think that's why, because this is, like, pretty super popular, but, like, I think it's because, one, there's so many queer characters. I mean, there's not, a, like, it, there's at least, like, four queer characters.
Right.
And so just having that many, that much queer representation, and especially, like, the old, this was the first non-binary representation I had ever seen. So
mm-hmm.
I think with that, people were still just like, well, I'm gonna excuse some of these other part because, like, it has a queer woman love triangle and a non-binary character in it.
Well,
like,
it was also on YouTube in 2014.
Yes.
So this was very uncringe for YouTube of 2014.
Yeah.
Yes.
This
yes.
was very serious.
You
and
mean the lawless wasteland of YouTube 2013?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, also, I think that, like, coming out at that time like this, like, no one was doing really scripted shows on YouTube at the time.
Yeah.
That was pretty rare. So
playing just Call of Duty or a single video game.
Right, like, it, or it was, like, you know, like...
The most scripted stuff you got was, like, stick figure randomness.
Right, like, it was very small production. So doing something like this on YouTube at that time, I also think, really made it... excuses a lot of it, because...
Yeah.
The audience is different. Like,
yeah, was, and you knew, like, I mean, like, I knew going into it.
The scripted thing when this came out that, like, was popular was, like, Smosh skits.
Right, exactly. It was, like, skits.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or stand-up, like, really bad stand-up.
Right.
Yeah, so, and, like, and you knew that going in, that, like, you know, it's a YouTube show.
Right, like, so I think that that's where, like, you know, I don't think we can compare it to, like, full-ass, like, TV, or even, like, scripted YouTube shows now.
Yeah.
Like,
are
anything
even
like that.
Still, like, scripted YouTube shows?
I don't really think so. There are a few.
Okay.
But,
there's
like...
Some, but most of those people then go to make, like...
Actual shows.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the...
Right,
like,
exactly.
The act, I mean, they live in Toronto, so they've all been in some...
I'm sure, yeah.
Some Hallmark production.
Yes.
I know Elise Bauman was, like, I think it was, like, the second or third Hallmark movie to feature the lesbians ever.
Uh-huh.
She was one of the leads in it, like, anyway.
I'm surprised Hallmark doesn't make more lesbians.
God, I watched one this year.
It's for the housewives.
Right, but I also feel like
there would be a
market for lesbians and also gay men, I think, more than they assume
that
there would
be. They've done a handful more gay men ones. They've just started, maybe.
But come on, like, so many
not
of the Hallmark...
Not horrors involved in them.
But so many of the... So
there
many,
might be, though. I watched one because it had Ally Gleibert from Bomb Girls was the lead in it, and... God, it was god awful. I'm not like a Hallmark movie person, but like it was so. I don't know. It's like the weird alternative universe that Hallmark movies work in really doesn't work if you try to make if you add diversity in any way, because like the one character is like she's supposed to be at like an artist collective, but like there's racial diversity. There's obviously like a like gender and like sexuality diversity in there, but the artist collective is also. Super into Christmas, and they were having a Christmas party, and there were Christmas trees
everywhere.
Yeah, they
need to make it more, like, vague
holiday.
So it,
but I feel like the aesthetic fits
then,
with
hey,
a lot of
Cal,
stereotypical...
Here's
oh my God,
if you were to... I would say, just here's the problem with that. How is it supposed to be Santa Claus or a secret Christmas prince if not Christmas?
Right, but you can just make it holidays.
Well, they could have just had a like a photographer and a lawyer who started fake dating and then started real dating, and it all was evolved around these Christmas parties.
Yeah.
But it's like, just make them holiday. Actually, that would have made way more sense if it was like a holiday thing, and then just like make one of them Jewish, and like they have to start at like a Hanukkah party, and then it ends at Christmas or something. It was a god awful movie.
Yeah.
anyway, back to this not god awful thing. Okay. So that night, Laura awakes from a nightmare, and Carmilla appears in a puff of black smoke in the back of the room.
Love the effect, by the way.
I do kind of like the one. It was the one attempt at some sort of special effect, and it's like I don't know if they released it, or maybe just somebody like screen grabbed it and then lightened it. It's very funny because like Natasha Negrevinos, who plays Carmilla, you can just see her like crouching in the back, and then like literally a little smoke bomb goes off
oh
and she
God.
Stands up. It's very funny. I was just like, oh, this is so cute. Like, yeah, I guess it does have that kind of like community theater.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like, oh, you don't have any real budget to do anything, so like, yeah, crouch and we're gonna send the smoke bomb off. Carmilla is pretty nice to Laura in this, and so then Laura asks her if she wants to go to the Zeta's party, and Carmilla admits that yeah, she would. And then Laura's like, okay, cool. And then she, like, nervously runs back into her bed. So Laura's dressed for the Zeta's party with a plan that she's going to go with Carmilla. She's going to lure her away somehow and then let Danny and the Zetas grab her. But then Carmilla comes into the room with champagne. Laura basically, like, calls her hot. Carmilla says that she doesn't want to spend time with her at the party. She'd rather spend time with her alone. And she bought incredibly expensive champagne. Did you notice this detail? That the incredibly expensive bottle of champagne? Did you look at the top of it?
Is it screw off?
It has screw off.
Oh my gosh. I didn't notice that.
I mean, this was like, I was so on Tumblr with this show, so like every little detail.
Right,
like,
right.
But that came up because I think she calls it like ludicrously expensive champagne. Like, wow, where did you even get that? And it's right there in front of the camera and it's a fucking twist off. So, But Camilla says she got champagne because she had it at the first party she ever attended. And this is, I feel like, is one of the most direct things in the novella, because yeah. Laura's like, why are you making that sound like it's like 100 years ago or something?
Yeah.
And Camilla sees that she's not wearing her the charm bracelet that she got her, and she's kind of freaking out about it. Camilla does some sort of like predatory flirting that Laura's like fully against. But then like literally everyone else, so Danny, Perry, Laugh, Kirsch, and Will all burst into the room. And then after a cut, Camilla is tied to a chair with a necklace of garlic on her, and her mouth is duct taped shut. There's like a moment of triumph, thinking that they've done it, they've caught her, but then there's some screaming. Then Kirsch comes in and says that Natalie is missing and Sarah Jane is dead.
Cal, do you want to make your Hallmark joke that you didn't get a chance?
That was most passed.
So anyways.
All I was going to say is that Hallmark has the chance to work with the lesbian aesthetic because, like, all Hallmark movies basically look like a Subaru like commercial already. Like, they have the chance to lean into the lesbian aesthetic that
they
goes
do,
with it.
Yeah.
Very, I mean, they all, every Hallmark movie takes place in, like, Vermont and Maine. Like,
or it doesn't, and it tries to play take place in New York City, but it's, like, clearly a couple of blocks in Toronto.
Yes.
Like, not even, I think it was fully a fake street, and they were trying to tell us it was Manhattan, and I was like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So SJ is dead. So cards that Laura initially found for Betty were in SJ and Natalie's room. Lab took some samples of whatever the goo is. And Kirsch says that SJ was saying something about a party and that when she tried to leave, she fell off the third floor of the dorm building. So now they realize that it couldn't have been Carmilla, but they decide that they're going to keep Carmilla tied up in the room and Laura's going to question her and figure out what's always going on. They, like, untable Carmilla's mouth, and she basically says, like, obviously she didn't do it. She tries to deny being a vampire, but nobody really believes that. So, like, fine, she's a vampire, but it doesn't mean she, like, was kidnapping anyone. So, based kind of on a joke from Perry, Laura, Danny, and Lev decide that they're going to keep Carmilla tied up and then starve her until she confesses. So then 9 days later, she's still tied up, and she basically starts convulsing. So Laura gives in and gives her some blood. She revives her, and Laura explains that she has to explain what she was doing at all those parties, because the night they captured her, it really seemed like she was going to kill Laura. And then Carmilla's like, wait, fuck, that's what you thought I was going to do? And then it clicks with Laura that she was actually just hitting on her, she wasn't trying to kill her. But Laura was luring her into traps, so Carmilla agrees that she might as well tell Laura her side of the story.
Which, this is where it's... This is where it's just almost beat for beat a Starian story through Baldur's Gate 3. Like, oh my god.
Oh,
almost
is this what you said? Okay.
Beat for beat. Like, I was like, because at first, you know, I'm listening, I'm like, all right, classic vampire shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, that's a weird coincidence. And then, like, more and more. To the point where, like, if I'm ever at a con with the writer, like, this is my question I'm asking, is have you ever watched the Carmilla web series? Because if not, this is a very weird coincidence.
Okay, so feel free to chime in with any comparisons here.
I will.
So Carmilla starts her backstory, and it's kind of the same as the novella, or it's at least pretty close. So she was born Carla Karnstein in 1680, but was murdered at a ball when she was 18. This is when Laura decides that she's going to play out the story with sock puppets.
Which, sure.
Okay. I felt like they needed something of being like, we can't just have them sitting beside each other.
In monologue. We need her to be doing something or she's going to start looking weird.
Yeah, so it's going to be weird of them just sitting there. What can we have her do? Sock puppets? So.
What are you talking about? Just to cover the stimming.
Yeah, Laura can't sit still that long. She needs to do something.
Yeah, that tracks, though. So, Camilla says that her mother found her and saved her from death and turned her into a vampire.
So that's the exact same thing.
Okay.
When Astarion was bleeding out, almost killed, Cazador came and turned him and then said that he was his dad.
Okay.
His father.
So they traveled the world for a few hundred years, doing basically the same thing they were doing in the novella. So Camilla would befriend a young woman. They would then fall ill. But Camilla said she was just a lure. Her mother would take them somewhere after that. Or, like, her mother would return, take them somewhere after that, and she never knew what happened to them. But then she met Elle in 1872, and she was different than the others. So when it was time to take Elle to her mother, they planned that they were going to run away to New York instead. But Elle didn't know that Camilla was a vampire, but her mom went around her back and told her that she was. So Elle was terrified, rejected her, and then Camilla's mother took Elle anyway. And then sealed Camilla, quote, in a coffin of blood so I could waste away my long centuries in the dark.
Okay, so here's where I went. Okay, before this is vampire 101.
Yeah, yeah, right, basic. We are the one of the 101 vampires. Right. So, yes.
You know, you get turned into a vampire. You like have like a master or some kind of authority figure, older vampire. Mm-hmm. You're then sent out to like seduce and lure. Like that's okay. That's pretty normal.
Yeah.
There is a scene in Baldur's Gate where you can ask like, why did you keep doing this? Like, couldn't you have just, like, not done these, done to take people to Cazador? Because also, he would lure people there, and then Cazador would take them and feed on them, presumably. That's always what they assumed. So, he tells this story about how one time he met this really sweet boy, and he just could not stand to go and bring him back to Cazador. So, he decided to run away, to, like, set the guy free and, like, try to run away, but he was unsuccessful, and Cazador captured him, killed the guy anyway, and sealed him in a tomb for a year.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty fucking similar. Like,
what the fuck? Yeah. I was like, okay. And that was when he realized that what he does, he can't help anyone. He has to just go along with it, because that's all he's going to be able to do.
Okay, but yeah, that is very close.
I was like, wait, this is weird. Yeah, anyway, that was bizarre. When I was like, the other stuff is pretty, you know, stereotypical vampire shit.
Yeah, that was, but that's very specific.
Yes.
So, Kumala stayed sealed in the tomb until World War II, when a bomb broke her tomb open. So she then went to Paris, and then her mom found her there in the 50s. And then she started this new ruse where, like,
I think Carmilla says, shut up. Like, times had changed, but the game had not. So
basically, it's now that Carmilla just enrolls at Silas. She does the same thing. She befriends students, brings them to her mom. Mm-hmm. And so she's been doing this every 20 years since the 50s. So she says she's been trying to, like, sabotage her mom's plans, but it's not as easy because she's too powerful. She never knows what happens to the girls. So she has been helping them, but she didn't help Betty. She thinks that some other vampire must have taken Betty to her mom, who is the dean.
And she also has siblings that she hates.
Mm-hmm.
That is another...
Yep.
That's another story.
Ah, okay.
Yep.
So, at the start of the next episode, Laura has, like, relayed this all to the others. But they still don't want to untie Carmilla. And she says she's fine with that, because if they're about to go up against the dean, she'd rather be tied up in a dorm room. So that night, Will, who's one of Carmilla's siblings, comes into the room, kind of makes fun of Carmilla for getting caught, and says that their mom's going to be disappointed in her. So Will unties her and says that they aren't waiting any longer. They need to take Laura to the dean now. Laura wakes up and she and Will kind of fight for a moment, but then Will captures her. He tries to bite her, but after some threats from Carmilla, she punches him and then he runs off. And as Laura is basically thanking Carmilla for saving her, she drinks from her and then fast runs out of the room.
I love the little fast run effect. It's so bad.
Yes!
it's clearly just like,
yeah, just fast forward.
Yeah, like, why didn't we get to speed up the front edge? So...
I guess I have a weird question. Why do you think that, like, I don't know. It's bizarre to me how beat for beat this is. And, like, I don't know. You have any thoughts on that? How weird that is? That, like, this kind of is a story that works? Because I don't think, personally, that the writer was inspired or had seen this. Because, it was kind of popular, I guess. But, like, it was also a pretty niche in itself. So
I think it was.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I feel like if... Well, who's Asterion's writer?
I can't remember his name, but he's in his, like, late 20s.
Okay.
So, it's possible time-wise.
It's probably... I feel like this was, like... Even, I mean, I've said it on here before. I saw this through Tumblr. Like, that was... And I feel like...
As far as I know, he's not queer.
Is he Canadian?
No.
Okay.
No, he's British.
Stephen Rooney.
Okay. Stephen Rooney, thank you.
I just Googled it.
Yeah,
So, I feel like... Most of the time, I feel like if people got to this... You were just, like, a queer woman most of the time on Tumblr.
Right.
Or you were very... which I think that was still the same thing. I was going to say, like, or you were very into, like, Canadian queer stuff that was coming out at the time. But that was also all, like, women-based stuff. It was Bomb Girls. It was Lost Girl.
Right.
It was, like,
Right. It was definitely the height of the lesbians are easier to do.
Yes.
So there was a lot of queer
this,
content.
This was
with
around the same,
at the time.
Same time. Because it was the show that Emily Andrus, who was like a half of the queer shit from Canada, came from Emily Andrus. Eventually, she was on the show that was Lost Girl, which that was the first ever show to have a canonically bisexual female lead. It started in like 2013. So like, so I feel like it was this, like this was kind of lumped in there because it's like, oh, like Canada's making a lot of much better queer representation, at least for women, than the United States is. So it was a lot of, like, queers on Tumblr were like, hey, let's, you know, watch all of this other Canadian stuff, because it was much more likely that there would be queer people in those. And there was a lot of different genre stuff, too. Like, The Lost Girl, the main character, is a succubus. And, like, everyone's, like, they're all different. Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like,
I say, you and I are the only two people that possibly watched Lost
Girl. Possibly. I tried to get my wife to watch that, too, and she got through the first episode, and she was just like, I'm not watching the rest of it. I was like, oh, really? I think the pilot's really good. And she's like,
yeah.
I'm not going to watch. Then, this is off topic. But, like, my wife Liv keeps going off that, like, oh, this Camilla thing is fucking horrible, and, like, Lost Girl is horrible, and I watched all this fucking cringe shit. Meanwhile,
she's watching Love is Blind.
No, not that. That's fine. That's different. You know what the bitch was fucking watching?
What?
Every fucking CW show from 2006.
Oh, good. That's even worse.
Smallville. She's watching The Vampire Diaries right now. And I was like, are you serious? You made fun of me so hard, and you were watching all of this stuff. I was like, okay, come on. You can't get mad at me when you were watching all of this.
You were just in different cringe circles.
Exactly.
The sci-fi shows were, like, a different brand of cringe, though.
Oh, the sci-fi shows?
Lost Girl was on
sci-fi.
It was Lost Girls. Lost Girl. Alphas.
Alphas. I forgot about that.
Oh, and then Being Human was all that
being
same
human.
Era.
Warehouse 13.
Warehouse 13, which is just a library, the librarian knockoff.
Oh, God. What was, what was that one? Continuum. Did you watch Continuum?
Yes, I watched Continuum. Oh, my
well,
God.
We were watching all these.
I loved the sci-fi channel.
Wait, have you watched Wynonna Earp, though?
I did not. I haven't watched Wynonna Earp.
Okay, that's it. The Emily Anderson show. Who? That one's actually good. That one's
I think I watched, like, episode one, and I was like, and Seven Cables came up, and I got distracted.
Yeah, no, that one's good. It's coming back. There's gonna be a 90-minute special on Tubi. Everyone's back. Like, so it's not.
But yeah, jeez.
Anyway,
sci-fi when it was good, just movie ruins.
I don't know if it was good, but it was fun.
It was something.
It was entertaining.
It was something.
Where were we here?
Oh yeah, I had sidetracked us by saying of how interesting and weird it is that, like, I don't know, that I feel like this story, as we go forward, too, becomes a very, very, like, I don't know, I guess common, especially in modern vampire stories,
mm-hmm.
of this.
No, I feel like it's the thing of, like, well, because they are, like, this powerful being, or you would assume they were from, like, whoever your point of view character is, being literally you in Baldur's Gate or Laura in this. Or even kind of Buffy with Angel's Wands.
What do you mean you in Baldur's Gate? It's obviously Dirge.
Well, yeah, but you're literally,
like, you're
in the point of view.
Asterion is talking to you.
Yes, yeah.
So it's like you would view them as this, like, oh, you're super powerful, you should be able to do anything. But then they'd be like, no, I'm not actually that powerful. There's someone more powerful than me.
That I'm terrified, and that's using me and
controlling
me.
And then that makes that person even more scary, because, like, the person who you think would be more powerful is scared of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think just, like, the thought of, I don't know, maybe this is just, I'm very claustrophobic. So, like, the thought of, like, being trapped in, like, a tomb.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Like,
even that, like, when Asterion talks about it, it's creepy and gross. He talks about, like, months trying to claw out of it, and months not doing anything, and months not being able to breathe, and, like, he talks about it, like, a little bit in depth of it being, like, the most horrifying, worst thing that's ever happened to him. So, like, yeah, it's very much, I think that's also a very human fear of being buried alive.
I was
going to
say, that was even
tomb.
Kind of a thing, because I mean, that is in Buffy, then she wakes up in her tomb, and then when Kenzie dies in Last Girl, but then doesn't really die, she also wakes up in her tomb, and they, like, realize it's about to happen, like, maybe 20 minutes too late. So, she is in there, like, clawing the fucking, like, top of her tomb. Spoiler for Lost Girl, no one cares.
No, a 10-year-old show?
Yeah, basically. So after Camilla Goofy fast runs out of the room. So we start the next episode. Laura basically saying that she thinks she's failed her first test ever. Because she hasn't been, I mean, I do like that we acknowledge that she has not been focusing
in
on school.
Class,
this is all she's been doing. So Laura has a conversation with Camilla, and she agrees to put the charm on, because Camilla says she's hoping that it'll keep other vampires away from her. Then Laff and Perry burst into the room. I think this is when we finally make a joke that nobody knocks on the fucking door. Because people just, no, it's much later. But, like, it became
like, when did people stop in the last 200 years? When did people stop knocking on doors or something? Yeah.
Because it became like a joke within the fandom. I'm just like, everyone just opens this door and bursts into the scene. So they kind of freak out that Camilla's loose. Laff is kind of finding it more suspicious than Laura is that Camilla doesn't know what's happened to the girls. Like, after her mother takes them. She says that it makes her blood undrinkable, but she doesn't really know anything else than that. Carmela says that she's basically been annoying her mom. She's not really, like, trying to defeat her in any way. Then Danny comes in and threatens to stay Carmela. So Carmela starts choking Danny almost to death, and then Laura kind of makes her stop and promises, and makes Danny promise that she's not going to kill her. And though they've never really been officially dating, this kind of turns into a breakup thing between Danny and Laura. Perry makes her and Laugh leave, but Carmela says she stays because she wants to see this. So Laura's whole reason here is that Danny's basically being too overprotective. And I love how many times we say sorry in this episode.
Sorry.
It was so Canadian. Laura's kind of getting mad that, like, everyone's trying to protect her and not, like, actually agreeing that she's an adult. Danny thinks it's basically Carmilla's fault that Laura's saying this, and Laura's saying, like, no, it's not her fault. Like, I'm the one saying this. So then Danny leaves. And then because it's the show, giant mushrooms start falling from outside. But I feel like that guy's kind of bringing in everything I was really annoyed with. Well, this is, I feel like, why, like, the Laura in the web series pushes back in a way, obviously, that the Laura in the novella doesn't.
Yeah.
Because, like, this Laura is, like, vocal about the fact that, like, stop treating me like a fucking child. Like, I can take part in the climax. Yeah. Like, you can tell me what my medical condition is. So, like, I think that's, I mean, it's a much more modern thing. So Laura has much more agency.
It would be weird if she didn't act.
And she was perfectly fine by being, like, protected by, like, Danny, Kirsch, and Carmela to some level. And then, like, Perry, but in a much more, like, motherly way.
Right. Yeah. It would be weird. You'd be like, what?
But I do kind of, like at this point, like, everyone's trying to protect her, basically except Laugh. Like, Laugh sees her as an equal, but, like, everyone else is being, like, very protective. So these giant mushrooms are something from the Alchemy Club. Everyone spent the night kind of getting rid of the giant mushrooms. So Laugh and Perry come in, and Perry is trying to, like, normalize everything that is happening. Laura has to tell them about the, like, quote-unquote breakup, I guess, with Danny. Laugh has tested some of the goo from Sergey and Natalie's room, and it's brain sac fluid?
Cerebral spinal fluid.
Yes, thank you.
That's what comes out of your ears and nose if you have a brain injury. Well, an open fracture, open cranium brain injury.
Is it also red?
Well, no. It will be blood and, well, if it comes out, yeah. It's like yellow. It's like, clear,
like
yellowish.
Like mucus-y stuff?
It's not really mucus. It's like thinner. It's like yellowy tinted.
Gotcha. So how was the representation on the goo?
Way too gooey. Okay. It's definitely more fluid. It's definitely kind of oily.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not.
So Levantine's kind of getting frustrated at Carmela that she doesn't really know anything.
Unless she had meningitis. Maybe then.
Possibly we're in college. So Lev found something in the cerebral spinal fluid that looks like a parasite. So
that's another modern trope I've noticed in vampire stuff is vampirism as a parasite.
See, I don't know if that's what this is, though. Because I...
Right, because it's because they're... The brain parasites are making them want to go to the celebration.
Yes.
Yes. But
and
like,
Carmela says whatever she's doing, she knows that it makes her blood undrinkable. So,
okay, yeah, so maybe
I think this is more...
It gave me a little bit of the Strain flashbacks.
Oh, God, the Strain.
Which I might want to talk about slightly about. Just because of how different of a vamp... Maybe I'll just mention it in my overall vampire video. How the extremes we can go on vampires.
Yeah. So, so while this is all kind of happening, Laugh is like, oh, hey, you seem to like Carmela now, Laura. This is fun. So while they're trying to figure out what to do...
Wait, I have one more question.
Yes.
Because what is... Do we mention at all the sun issue for vampires? Because I've noticed sometimes, like, while we're filming, it looks like it's day out. But then we still have the, like, she sleeps till, like, 5 p.m., which makes me think, like, oh, she is, like, nocturnal. Or closer to nocturnal, but I don't feel like we ever mention it, at least in this season. Can she go in the sun? Can vampires in this world go in? But it was also night, though, when we did, like, the little ritual, right?
Yeah. God, now I'm trying to think, remember if they ever...
Talk about it?
Yeah. I'm now wondering if, like, I don't want to, like, spoil too far, but I'm wondering if that's why... Okay, No, I don't want to spoil that. I don't think it's ever fully mentioned. God, the one adaption, it's called Lore and Carmela by S.C. Simper. That was the one that I listened to during the 20-mile one, and I was like, I don't know if... I re-listened to it. It's not very good. Uh-huh. I think I was just really invested because I was, like, half dying. And yeah. I was just like, this one is actually going well, and I'm, like, so invested in these characters. But that one almost feels like a fanfic where they try to, like, explain a lot of things that don't really explain. So I was about to be like, oh, well, she's just weakened in the sun. And I was like, wait, no, that's not a real fact. That's from that one, like, book.
Yeah.
So, no, I guess it's not really addressed. But we do say that she sleeps all day. But then I guess you're right. She's not
like, the curtains aren't always drawn, and her bed is actually, like, in the view of the...
Yeah.
She's definitely in the worst, but maybe it is just, like, direct outside sunlight.
Well, like, maybe it's, like, I mean, it's not, you know, actual vampire lore, but, like, in the video game Skyrim, if you catch vampirism, it's really Oblivion, if you catch vampirism, it's not, like, the sun doesn't actively kill you, it's just, like, your character has, like, blurred vision and headaches and everything.
Right, like, it makes you sick.
I was
going to
say, about as real vampire lore, it could be, like, in Twilight when they live in the Pacific Northwest, so it's always cloudy.
So, I watched a whole thing today about they're not actually vampires, they're Mormon angels.
That the lore of how they're vampires.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
We'll go with it. I'll show, talk to you about that after this, but yeah.
I feel bad for Forks, Washington. They were just a normal town, and then someone did this to them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to go to Forks, Washington.
No!
it's like half and half of, like, it was just always funny, like, anytime...
We have to get the filters.
Anytime I would actually, like, watch the news when I lived in Seattle, that, like, Forks would be on, like, the weather maps, and it was just always very funny. But, like, they would seem to be split, half the people being like, I can fucking make money off of this, and half the people being like, tourists, get out of my fucking town!
Yes.
So...
Is there a line to play baseball there?
God, somebody should open
a batting cage.
Just play that
massive black hole playing on loop.
I was gonna say, play that song on loop.
They just have blue UV lighting in there.
Anyway, so while Leth and Laura are trying to figure out what to do about this, Perry starts basically through this entire episode, Perry's very carefully making Laura's bed behind all of them while they're talking about this. So Perry starts getting freaked out by, like, this is not what being an RA was supposed to look like. And, like, this is all too crazy. And she ends the episode by yelling at the two of them, be normal.
Okay, repressed homophobia. No, I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, because this kind of leads into a fight between Perry and LaFontaine, where they're kind of conflating, like, dealing with Camilla and vampires and brain parasites with, like, Laf's gender identity. And it ends with Perry basically, like, storming out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
So, Laura decides that, like...
Yeah, that was a little rough.
Yes, yeah.
Very much the, like, but I knew you as, you know, blah, and they were my best friend, and you're not them any... Yeah, like, That was shitty. That was really shitty.
Yes. Which, Laura decides that they should kind of have a movie night to, like, get over this, so, like, Laf agrees to do that. So, Laura's asleep on her bed with LaFontaine, and then... like, wakes up in the middle of a nightmare, but it's right after Carmilla gets back into the room. So Carmilla says that, like, Laura shouldn't be having these dreams anymore. But Laura says, like, she's not. They're different now. It's a girl in a nightdress. And she was telling Laura not to go into the light because the light is hungry. And Carmilla thinks this is Elle, but she's never gotten to see her. So to figure out what this light thing means, they decide that they should go back to the library. So Laura starts filming, like, a little, like, goodbye video to Perry and Danny, and then LaFontaine is like, no, fuck that. Like, we don't have to answer to them. Like, we don't have to do this. We can do this on our own. And Carmilla is kind of like, okay, I like this. And then they all go to the library together.
This is interesting and maybe a little off topic.
Mm-hmm.
But Elle also gives me very, like, Sebastian vibes. But then also, I just realized that all he says in, like, that thing of where he got trapped in the tomb and everything is that he was, like, a very sweet boy. Yeah. He never mentions a name. So technically, I guess that... And that it was early in his, like, time as a vampire. And then he, like, tells Sebastian that it's been almost 200 years that he was one of his first. But then also, apparently, when you're playing the Asterion Origin... you pretty much, like, can choose to lie to him about how you felt. So that, like, I'm so confused. I'm like, wait, was this the same person we're talking about? That has almost nothing to do with this, but... right, but that very
No, I'm more just saying, Jordan Hall, the creator, did eventually reveal that Elle is just supposed to be the Laura from the novella. So this could be that Assyrian's writer just read Camilla the novella. And that's kind of what he was more
basing
it on.
Also wouldn't surprise me with, like...
Well, yes, if you're writing a vampire, right?
Yes.
You're probably going to read some vampire
literature. You're going to write a queer vampire, like, why? Maybe go back to the start, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So that is definitely also, yeah. But And I mean, I guess we did also have the Camilla sealed in the tomb in the book, but more as of, like, a voluntary thing. That seemed
Well, that was more like she had to go back to her tomb to get strength, yeah.
Yeah, but, I just randomly thought about that, because I was like, oh, well, in some ways, Elle kind of reminds me of Sebastian. And then I was like, but that's not the person that he said that, like, you know, he had cared for. And then I was like, well, but maybe it was. I don't know. Sorry.
I was just saying, well, you mean sleeping in the tomb thing, you gotta sleep on your ancestral soil. You don't want to get blacked out in Atlantic City.
Right. There's a bunch of different lore with vampires and how they sleep in tombs and coffins and all that stuff. So I guess maybe that's just also a making.
Also, like, that is a sunlight thing as well, because, like, coffins are
right,
pretty hermetically sealed.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But, like, that, like, taking that ideal of, like, the goofy vampire in a coffin and making it kind of, like, horror also, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, no, you're sealed in there against your will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess.
I guess that could also just be kind of that.
Think about it's like, toxifying a safe space.
Right, you think of it as, like, the cool space.
It's their safe space, yeah. And then they're like, cool, we brought guns.
Yeah.
So, once they get back from the library, they got some giant Sumerian book. And they were able to recover the consciousness of J.P. Armitage, a Southern student who went missing into the library catalog in the 1870s.
See, this is the kind of camp this is what I was like, this
JP.
Is getting camp. I like this now. Like, after, well, honestly, once we hit, like, I'm a vampire, this is the stuff that's going on. I feel like that was when I was really invested. Also, I forgot the fucking interview with the vampire reference.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like, when she says, like, she's a vampire, an honest to Lassant vampire. And I was like, that was so fucking
there
stupid.
There are so many crazy. Yeah,
oh, dude, there's references.
I heard that and, like, it was like, oh, what?
Well, yeah, no, because that's like the kind of. Well, that's kind of, I feel like, why this hit so well on Tumblr.
Yes.
Like, because it was like. Because Laura's a fucking Tumblr. Well, that's
yes,
God, I can't
very
believe
100%.
I can't believe I haven't mentioned
her
this.
And Camilla are the two spectrums of Tumblr girls.
Well, this was very funny. I can't believe I haven't mentioned this yet. So Ellen Simpson, who, like, I credited as one of the writers, who is credited as one of the writers, she didn't write anything for the show. She was the alternative media writer because Laura and Camilla both had Tumblrs. And then they also had Twitters. And then eventually LaFontaine got a Twitter, too.
Uh-huh.
So, in between, okay.
See, this was totally the era of that.
Yes,
yeah.
Well, because this was after the sixth episode.
But did they have a Spotify playlist?
that was before the era
of that. I don't
think
it was really
for that. It was a joke.
But, so, it used to be that, so after the first six episodes come out, it would come out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, both at 5 p.m. So, after that Thursday episode would air, there would usually be one or two social media posts from one of those accounts over the, like, from that Thursday to the next Tuesday.
Right.
So that's why I think, I can't, it's not that great, but I feel like being a fan of the show, like, it's specifically when it was airing at the time, was, like, such a specific moment that I don't feel like exists anymore because,
right.
like, you can't be there where, like, everyone you're interacting with on social media is talking about this, or the fact of, like, the amount of, like, music videos and artists and, like, rabbit holes that people would go down because, like, Camilla posted a music video. And then everyone would watch that music video and be like...
And be analyzing
and be
it
like, what the fuck is that? And then everyone's like going through all of this. So it was like, it was this very, very specific thing. It was also very funny because I know with the Twitters, they started like... No, it wasn't like... Because it's always just like the static shot of the dorm room.
Uh-huh.
So like if you notice like the yellow pillow switches beds,
yeah.
which is supposed to be like Camilla's stealing it and then Laura's
stealing
it back. So somebody made a Twitter account for
the yellow
pillow big thing like it's sentient, so it's moving.
Right.
So... So the pillow started tweeting at the Laura account, but then Ellen Simpson had the Laura account tweet back at the pillow.
Right.
So then Laura's like, what's going on? Why is everything in my room sentient? Because, like, people started making Twitter accounts.
Of course.
Well, all of this
also,
shit in her room, and it was so fun.
Right. Well, and also, like, God, I've read some very weird fan fictions that did shit like this. And I think it was maybe just called Social Media AU. For some reason, I saw tons of them in the, our flag is, oh my God.
Our flag means death?
Yes, I don't want to say it is so much. Our flag means death fandom, where it was like, it was the only time, and I was like, is this just like a new trend that everyone's moving towards? And then the fandoms I've been in since, no, it was just that one for some reason. But they would do that, where they would have all these Twitter posts or like
mm-hmm.
different things that would interact with each other, and you would read through it like it was like you know, like a feed. And... Yeah, I feel like at that time, though, there were a lot of different, like, people doing that for PR for
mm-hmm.
different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, almost more of that weird found footage shit I was talking
about.
Where,
yeah.
Like, where, with that, how many vampire stuff is, like,
yeah,
notes
I mean,
or
I guess
stuff.
That's a good point of, like,
but,
it's
like,
supposed to be that, like, I guess
it's
I
happening at the time. And also, she says that she has fans that follow this and sees it.
Yeah.
So, like, it would make sense that even if. Without, like, the show, like, that she could be a person and somebody could be seeing them and then making jokes about her pillow.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the thing of, like, it does, like, she, like, it does kind of become a YouTube channel. Like, mm-hmm. in, like, because she's posting it, like, live, but, like, yeah, okay.
Even in the fiction of the universe,
it makes sense.
There's an audience and a fandom
yeah.
that exists here that's yeah. following this.
And I feel like that's what we've kind of, like, established, that, like, that's, like, how online Laura is, even at this time. Because it was, God, what was that one? I can't remember what it was called. It was not as good. It was another Verge Girl TV, like, YouTube channel show, but it was The Three Musketeers.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a little bit of it. But, like, the lead character in that, she was, like, D'Artagnan. I've never read Three Musketeers, right. I don't know. But, like, so, she, like, the whole thing was she was also doing vlogs. I think she just had a YouTube channel, so she was, like, doing vlogs. But the whole thing is, like, she had, like, a chat window, so there was, like, a chat that she was always going on with different fans. And God, what the fuck was it?
There were a lot of video games like this, too, at that. A lot of horror video games, specifically.
But one of the people in the chat, I can't remember what the fuck it was. But, it was pretty blatant that it was probably Laura. So, like, I don't remember exactly what it was. But, like, oh, but I think that icon was the same icon that was, which is just a thing for, it's Lois Lane from, early Superman comic. But, so it was also that. So it was supposed to be, like, Laura was, like, friends with this girl. She was one of the people, like, constantly chatting on those videos, which is why I initially started watching it. But then I was like, this is bad. Like,
yeah.
not saying that Camilla
right.
Camilla is great. But, like, yeah, so, like, it was kind of this time of being, like, let's integrate all this other kind of stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah.
That was very fun. And I think it's sometime in the second season. It was when, I don't know if they still have it, actually. Maybe they do. Tumblr had, like a suicide prevention thing on it. And if you, like, posted enough stuff that they were, like, it got worried that you uh-huh. were having suicidal ideations, it would send you, like, resources. The Laura one got triggered a couple times.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I think Ellen Simpson went on, like, her own Twitter and was like, wow. I was like, sorry, fans, if we're doing this to anyone. Like, I promise. Yes. Like, it's going to be a happy ending. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But she was just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Anyway, where... Okay, JP has been introduced. That's what got us on that tangent. Okay, so... So he can basically type things on screen now from the flash drive that his consciousness is on. And we found out that he was basically the Laura of, like, the 1870s, and he was kind of, like, pretty poorly researching everything that was going on. So Camilla's flipping through this giant book, but she can't really find anything because there's a lot of ancient things that wanted to eat girls. Barry comes in to make sure everyone is alive. She doesn't really speak to Laura Fontaine or anything, and then Laugh and Perry leave, and Laura and Camilla start kind of focusing on the book. Like, Laura thanks Camilla and says... for coming with them and, like, helping, but Camilla says, like, she's not doing any heroic vampire crap. She's just trying to, like, make sure that Laura doesn't get killed. So, Laura begins kind of focusing on, like, actual schoolwork the next morning, but Perry then bursts into the room because La Fontaine is missing. There was one of those note cards that was in their room, but it's a bit more threatening than the other ones were.
Mm-hmm.
Perry's fully freaking out. And Camilla, like, basically says that this makes sense, that they're, like, kind of quickly taking people since, like, Estee died and Camilla stopped them from taking Laura. Which really was not a helpful thing for Camilla to say because Laura's already being like, holy fuck, this is all my fault. And then, like, Perry's like, wait, what? So you saved Laura, but you didn't save La Fontaine? I think this is when Camilla says that she isn't the hero of this piece and then she, like, storms out of the room. And then this is what Kyle was kind of saying, that, like, what Perry said to La Fontaine was really shitty, and Perry is terrified that that's going to be the last thing she ever said to La Fontaine. So, Lou's kind of freaking out, and then they remember that nobody told Kirsch that Will is a vampire. So,
I kind of liked Kirsch more than I thought I would by the end of it.
I really like Kirsch. He's a very fun character. Because, like, I feel like it's because...
He feels very early 2000s, like, you know, comedy... teen guy, you know what I mean? Like,
well,
very much that joke kind of.
Well, yeah, because he's introduced of, like, you know, like, I'm a threatening sexual assault frat guy, but then like, he's really not, and he's just, like, a real dumb guy who's, like, thinks he's doing the right thing, but he's, like, so wrong about it.
Yeah,
so Laura tells Chris that he needs to be careful around Will, and he says, like, you know, he will, but, like, even if Will's a vampire, like, you know, I think he literally says, like, we're still bros first, so.
Yeah.
And you guys all think he'll be more careful. He then invites Laura to another party that they're having. And then after, like, a little bit of talking, I think Kirsch also invites Camilla to the party. She kind of admits that, like, you know, being, like, a college-age kid now really isn't as different as it was in 1698. So she said she liked waltzing back then because it was scandalous. And then they kind of waltz together a little bit. And then Laura admits that she's really starting to have a crush on Camilla, which is really unfortunate because she's kidnapping people and possibly, you know... saved her and then led to Laugh possibly being kidnapped and killed.
I will say one thing. I think this is where I started to not like Laura a little bit. Where I was like, how are you still mad at her? Like, she literally was just like, I don't know. I feel like she gave the whole reason of why she's been forced to kidnap people. Like, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it feels like a little...
Maybe that is my own bias of literally being like, this is like a Starion and being like, because you pretty much have the same choice,
right?
Well, I
feel like that's... Yeah.
To be like, okay, well, you were forced to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, so I feel like a little bit I was like, well, obviously she doesn't want to do this.
I mean, I feel like this is a little bit of the thing, which maybe just admitting that Natasha's a better actress than Elise is. But I feel like Carmilla starts getting really sympathetic after the, you know, tied up. Now I'm like, I'm fully on Carmilla's side. Well, because it was very funny because, like, not having really any idea where this was going, like, I knew, like, there was a vampire in this. So at the very early on, I'm almost just like, oh, so Danny and Laura, the couple I'm supposed to be rooting for, and then I'm just like,
yeah.
Wait, no, I don't really like Danny at all. Like in the beginning,
really
I was
switched,
like, I don't like you, and then and then she starts switching pretty quickly too. So like, but I feel like by this point I was like fully on Carmilla's side, which I guess like, so maybe it's just like we needed to manufacture conflict. There needed to be conflict until closer to the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, it is kind of like, okay, fucking come on, Laura.
Like,
there's no real...
Damn, okay, you're being a little harsh here.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like, I mean, LaFontaine is missing, but like, Carmilla didn't really have anything to do with that. She just didn't stop something from happening to LaFontaine. But literally,
how could she stop
from everyone
being kidnapped?
Yeah, and no one even knew that LaFontaine was being targeted. It was just like...
And if
like,
Laura had been kidnapped anyway, they still would have blamed Carmilla.
Exactly.
So it didn't matter.
Perry's kind of still freaking out about LaFontaine being kidnapped. So she's, like, cleaned all of the dorm room, and she's also made brownies. And she really wants them to focus on finding LaFontaine, but Laura basically explains that, like, they tried all the logical options when Betty went missing. So they focus on researching on the book, but because Perry is, like, spaz cleaning around them, she bumps into Carmilla, who's drinking a pint glass of blood, which spills onto the book, reveals an entry about Lafaformes, which is a giant fish god monster that demands 5 virgins in their early 20s whose views narrow to celebration. So this is what we think that Carmilla's mom / the dean has been feeding the souls to, and that they must still be conscious in there since Elle has been, like, appearing through dreams. And then LaFontaine just appears in the back of the room, and everyone's like, what the fuck? So Laf doesn't remember being taken. You know, they ask what is going on, and they tell Laf about Lafaformes. Carmilla, like, calls her mother worshiping at some kind of cult. But, so Laf managed to, record their own kidnapping by Will and a few others. And there is some sort of witch roll that is happening on Friday, which is also when Laura's English paper is due.
Very important.
Well, it brings Danny back into it. So Perry is scared that, Laf is going to start going into, like, party nonsense faster than the others. So then, this is, like, sometimes it's like, okay, plot reasons, and I guess this could have been the writing being better. So episode 31 starts with Laura finding a weird old necklace just like hanging on her desk. So she just like puts it on.
Nowhere.
Like thinking it's from Carmilla, which is like, I don't know. Why would, I don't know. So Carmilla and JP are kind of researching mythical weapons on campus. Laura's decided to kind of focus on school again. And that basically means inviting Danny to talk about her grade in English. So Danny isn't watching the videos anymore, but she's still worried that she is still filming when she, like, comes in, especially after what happened to LaFontaine. And, God, this is, like, fully... Like, I had fully turned on Danny at this point. I was like, I don't fucking like you.
Yeah.
But then I get so fucking pissed at her, because she's, like, mad at Laura that she's, like, talking about grades and not, like, the possibility of a relationship between the two of them. And I was like, she broke up with you. Also, you never really dated, but also she broke up with you.
Right. And also, like, okay, I will say maybe an email would have been better to send your TA about, like, an assignment change.
But
I guess
but
if you are also friends with that TA, seeing them in person might make more sense.
I mean, and at the end of the day, we are technically a TV show. This is at the time of, like, people go to, like, bars to have 5-second conversations and then leave. Like, you drive all the way to someone's house, knock on their door, and tell them one thing.
So
Danny's being, like, super jealous of Carmilla at this point. Yeah, so she... I think Danny just basically yells and then officially leaves, and Laura's like, fuck, I'm failing English. So we're still kind of looking through the book, trying to figure out what else we can find. I think I got distracted here by hearing. This is like what you were saying, though, with the references. There's a reference to the myth of St. George and the dragon, which is what Samantha Sharon used that myth, like, as a basis for the Priory of the Orange Tree. And I was like, Jesus Christ, fucking 10 years later, the show is making new references for me.
Yeah.
So there's also a Holy Grail reference. There's a mythical hand grenade. What's the thing?
Yes,
the
Holy Hand Grenade.
Yeah, the Holy Hand Grenade of Antioch. That's what it is. But JP finds the Blade of Hastur, which in Samantha Sharon's second book, and that is...
Hastur is also one of the demons from Good Omens.
Okay, it's also one of Glorian's...
Hastur is also the name of...
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a classic.
Well, I wasn't even going to say demon. Hastur is also the name of the Yellow King, which is from Lovecraft mythology.
Okay.
So, like, you know, like, remember the one that, like, has the one that isn't a chameleon? The one, the frog one.
The frog one.
Which only makes sense as an Eldritch
being.
We were drunk as shit the one time we watched Good Omens.
Okay, well, your wife actually likes it. So well, I was like, maybe you've seen it in the background
No, I've seen more of, like, Smallville and Vampire Diaries for some reason.
The wrong kind of gay.
So,
which is weird because it's plant and also book.
So we've found the Blade of Hastur, which can kill the fish god, but it's sealed inside the wall of an underground cavern like 1,000 feet under the sea. But Camille says, like, you know, she can get the sword. She's a vampire, so...
So that was probably actually Lovecraftian.
It was probably Eldritch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes most sense.
So,
especially with the fish thing.
Yeah, the fish god that lives under the sea.
Dagon? There's multiple fish.
Little Mermaid?
Yeah, King Triton actually. She
seems to be another demon in Good Omens. But right, but you know, like that's like kind of the Cthulhu, right? He lives under
Cthulhu
the ocean.
Lives
he rests under the oceans, yeah. And then when he comes up, yeah, he goes.
Yeah, Dagon is the god of the fish people of it.
Sure.
So
you guys didn't like your,
but also very hilarious
New Englander lore.
Very hilarious that also we now have realized that the people we're luring are being used for some huge ritual, which is also an Astarian thing.
Oh, okay.
We find out that everyone he ever killed that brought to Cazador, he made into spawn to be sacrificed in a huge ritual so that Cazador can become what's called the Vampire Ascendant and basically be a super powerful vampire that
can walk in the light.
Okay.
So, also having to do with light. But I mean, also it's more
like
power-wise.
Is it 7,000 students?
No, it's like 5 every 20 years. We're more sacrificing to a god here than we are making a huge... deal with the demon. But still, an evil ancient ritual is still very funny.
I think this is when Laura basically says, tells Camilla, like, I thought you said you weren't going to do any of your, like, horror vampire stuff. She's like, well, my mom fed the only person.
Also Astarian. He multiple times is like, why? People are calling me a hero. I hate this. I don't. He specifically says that at one point in Act 1.
I feel like he did get to that.
But it's funny because in the epilogue, he literally is Batman in one of the epilogues.
Yeah. Because they are actually heroic. That's the whole point.
So, you know, she says, like, well, her mom fed the only person she ever cared about to a monster, and maybe she doesn't want it to happen again. Oh, wait, fuck. So, I was like, wait, so do you like me?
Gortash?
If you're romancing him, he kind of says the same shit. You can literally be like, well, oh, you know, we can't, because he wants to take the power for himself, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
You have to convince him not to. And one of the things you can say is, like,
if you care about
all
the
these people, like, if it was me, otherwise, like, what else would I be? Like, I would just be another person that would be here, like, just someone else trying to, like, love you and care about you.
Well, I guess like that also does go back to the novella. Like, it seems that, like, everyone else died almost instantly, but Laura stayed around for two months because Carmilla didn't want her to die as quickly as the others. But then Carmilla and JP both freak out about this random necklace that Laura just fucking put on. And then she starts to transform into the Dean. So Dean Laura starts chastising Carmilla for having not, like, brought Laura to her already. She then unplugs and smashes JP, which is very sad. The Dean then tells Carmilla that Elle never really loved her because stone cannot love flesh. So she knows about the sword, but it consumes anyone who ever wields it. So the Dean tells Carmilla that she can't fight back, but she'll let Carmilla keep Laura if she stops this stupid little gang from fighting back against them. Will then drags in Kirsch. Carmilla is like, what? I thought it was just virgin girls that you had to feed to the fish god, but then the Dean is... Oh, God. Like, it's something like I can't remember exactly what
it was. It's like, well, we only do that for tradition or something.
Oh,
it doesn't matter.
Oh, and she's like, oh, you read that translation? Like, no, that's just, like, we were just doing that to be traditional. It doesn't really matter. Which, I really like that they added this line, and I wonder if it was, like, because... At this point, everyone's like, well, one is to justify Kirsch, but at, like, at this point, some of the fans were like, wait, if we only take virgin girls, why the fuck did they take LaFontaine? That doesn't make sense. Like, I'm pretty sure that character is non-binary, but this fixes the issue. Right. It just has to be virgins. So.
But it, I don't even think it does have to be virgins, right? Because we've, it seems like, because all they said were virgins in period. Which, like, yes, okay, if we're reading ancient texts, we're guessing virgin girls.
Yeah.
But all they say is virgins. And I just think that we were saying that he's like a party boy that's trying to fuck everyone. He clearly fucked SJ. I think that was more what they were saying. Okay, he's not a virgin.
Yeah, yeah, maybe I'm just remembering that's true. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. But anyway, we fixed...
Which I'm like, okay, sir, yes, you're correct. Virginity is a social construct.
And that's why I'm glad that we fixed the, like, yes, the gender issue. Yes. Because everyone was just like, wait, I thought LaFontaine was non-binary. How...
Also, there's a lot of virgins at this college. If that's the case.
What is it? Brigham Young University?
Yeah, right. Like, what is it?
So Camilla basically agrees to this deal with her mother, saying that she can take Kirsch if she gets to keep Laura. So then the dean, like, takes off the necklace and then, like, Laura returns. So everything's going, like, a bit nuts out of this. They've resorted to having to tie up LaFontaine because they keep wanting to go to the party. Laura is totally convinced that Camilla's going to go and get the sword. And Perry is, like, whittling steaks in the back of the room. So Laura's annoyed that they're kind of just, like, having this, like, sit-tight plan. But Camilla says, like, this is the best way to keep them all safe. But, like, Laura has this, like, grand idea that she's going to go crowdsource some campus resistance. But it really doesn't work because Danny's still mad about the breakup. So she's, like, spearheading the summer society resistance about this. And Will and Kirsch have now gone missing, and they were last seen in Laura's dorm room, so the Zetas are also pissed at her.
So they went to kiss.
So, campus is basically turned into a war zone, and Laugh just keeps saying that they want to go to... Laura then realizes that there's some video footage that got posted automatically without her realizing it, and that was the footage of her being the dean from the last episode. So she watches it, and then Laura and Perry confront Camilla about this. So Laura is mad that Camilla basically gave up on saving everyone else and, like, let Kirsch die basically to save her. So then she says that they're done.
Which, again, Laura is a little bit too righteous sometimes. She's not a little realistic.
Yeah.
She's playing lawful good, which I think is my favorite. I mean, I think is my least favorite alignment. It's like, yeah, the rules can be broken sometimes, Laura. We don't need to follow all the rules.
I mean, she's 19. Like, so I feel like this is the thing of, like, she thought college was going to be, like, this perfect, cool experience, and she was just going to do, like, some cool...
It was her college till they're 19.
I think so. Well, this is, like, in Europe, it would be 19. So, like, this is the funny, like, thing of this, like, I kind of like that we still added the, like...
Because I was like, oh, she's in her second year. I assumed she was in her second.
No, yeah, no.
That's kind of why I was like, why are there so many virgins? We've already been here a whole year.
No, we're not virgins. Her and, I think she's the only, her and Betty are supposed to be in that first year. And I think possibly, I don't know if we say how old Sarah Jane and Natalie are, but,
But Perry, obviously,
Perry,
isn't because she's
Perry,
an RA.
Laugh, and, Carmilla are all in the third year, and Kirsch is in his second year.
Okay.
And I think JP got sucked in while he was in his first year, so he wasn't there very long in it.
But Camilla also died when she was 18.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's like 18.
I mean, she's 18. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, right.
She's 18 slash.
So now at the end of her college, she's probably going to look a little young.
Well, she's only here for a couple of years, and then she leaves, and then she comes back 20 years later. We start episode 34. Laura starts episode 34 with an update about how she's pretty sure they're all going to die. And even if they don't, she's probably failed out of college anyway. So that was what I was getting at. I like the thing of, like, it feels like something we kept from the novel that, like, they're all English, but we're in Austria. Of this, of, like, we're all Canadian, but we're in Austria.
Yeah.
Like, which they do go into in one of the later seasons that, like, all of the fucking locals know that this university is, like, fucking terrifying and all this weird shit happens.
Yeah.
So nobody from Austria fucking goes to this university. So it's, like, all international students.
What's funny is I totally forgot that, like... I know that they say it in the beginning that
they're
in Austria.
Yes, but then they never really say it again.
So I just, like, assumed that we were just in, like, a, you know, like, spooky, magic-haunted school in, like, Toronto. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
in Canada. Somewhere in Ontario.
Well, but if you did just the playlist version... Did you get the Christmas special?
I watched the Christmas special.
Okay, see, the next time it is fucking mentioned is the goddamn Christmas special.
Yeah, it was weird.
Which we won't talk about it yet because there are some spoilers into that. But that is, like, the next time that we reference we're in Austria. Like,
Because it's mentioned in the first episode, then kind of never mentioned again.
Yeah, I just kind of like, I guess I just, that went right over my head, and I was like, oh, okay, we're in Canada.
Yeah, like, obviously we're in Canada. Everyone is fucking Canadian. Except for in the next, in the second season, one of the new characters we introduce, he's South African. So we have, like, one character who is not Canadian. Laura's basically saying that, like, she's probably failed out, and she could basically do nothing and just, like, go safely back home to her dad, but... Then Laura starts saying that they really need to go to this party. Laura realizes that that is basically what Carmilla got from the translation that their world narrows to celebration. So Perry agrees to allow Laura to have Laura go to the party.
Yeah, well, maybe it's not, because they thought like it was just vague, like they become party girls. They're like, no, maybe they're talking about a specific...
When there was just celebration, and they were just like, right. Maybe just celebrating, but it's like, no, it might be a this place. Celebration. Because yes. This yeah. Was even before she died, SJ like specifically said to Kirk, like, when they
we did, go
like,
place.
You're gonna take me to the party, right? And he's like, yeah, I'll take you to the party. Like, Cord's like a goodbye message to her dad and kind of a half one to Carmilla. And then we cut, and it's Carmilla watching this and kind of freaking out. And then Danny just bursts in, blaming Carmilla for whatever fucking happened to Laura because she saw what had been posted. Danny and Carmilla kind of piece together through Laura's text that they are under the Lustig Theater building. Danny rounds up the Summers and the Zetas, and Carmilla says she's gonna go after the sword. So then Carmilla and Danny kind of both leave the room. Then a cut to black, and then we hear Laura saying, then something totally unexpected happened, we actually won. And then literally everybody except Carmilla is in frame. It's all of the regular cast, plus Natalie, Elsie, and Betty. Then Laura continues, we won, and Carmilla is dead. And remember how I said earlier that these episodes came out on Tuesdays and Thursdays?
Mm-hmm.
This fucking Thursday was American Thanksgiving! And the episodes dropped at 5 p.m. So when this happened on Tuesday, because this was the Tuesday episode.
Right.
Sorry, I don't know if I think I got too heated there. So this was the fucking Tuesday episode.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's fucking watched this and it's like, what? No! We can't fucking end like that. Like, so like half the fan base was like, and I was like, what? What's the big deal? I'm like, it's fucking Thanksgiving in America. Like everyone's like, I'm going to be at my fucking uncle's house.
Yeah.
How am I going to like watch this?
Well, they're only a few minutes. Just go act like you're taking a shit for a while. Oh, but phones... I mean, phones weren't really the same.
Nope.
There wasn't really data so much.
So did you notice that I disappeared for 6 minutes?
No.
On Thanksgiving 2014 at Joe and Kathy's house? I went into the bathroom. Not the one off the living room. The one that was off of their bedroom that hardly anyone ever used. Because it was like... I'm not fucking waiting. I need to watch this fucking episode. So I did disappear on Thanksgiving to go.
Well, you're very lucky that our family's huge.
Our family's huge. Yes.
So one person to disappearing. Our mom is one of nine.
Yes.
So one person disappearing for a while is not that noticeable.
Yeah. I was so worried. I was like, someone's gonna think I'm taking a massive shit in here. Like.
It's Thanksgiving. That's the day you're allowed to take a massive shit out of
it. No, it was before we even ate. It was not one of the times when, like, Joe and Kathy made us fucking eat at, like, 2 p.m. Like, I remember I had, like, 3 glasses of wine. I was, like, kind of drunk, and I was just like, fucking Carmilla's coming out.
I was, like, kept... Too.
Oh, that was the time, Mom. That was the one. When, our grandma and our great-aunt Marion... Remember... Mary just started fucking downing wine. She downed, like, 2 glasses of wine, and then her, like, sister or grandma had to, like, help her to the bathroom. And it was literally, like, 2 drunk college girls, like, going into the bathroom to take care of each other, but they went into, like, early 80s. So, anyway.
I don't remember that shit at all, but that was my first mid-year of, like, college, and I was real depressed. So,
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going through it at that time.
Oh, yeah, no, because I watched all this when we were still living at the Clayboy Mansion.
Yeah, yeah.
Although it's dun dun dun, you were here
right
probably
before
season
we moved
2.
Out, yeah.
Yeah. So.
That explains why I heard it all the time.
Well, yeah, when
the
season
later
two,
seasons were
season
going.
Season 2 and 3.
Probably
yeah.
Right when you started
coming
spending
over,
the night quite a lot and then moved in.
That would have, yeah, that would have been season 2. So. So, basically, the start of this episode on fucking Thanksgiving. So, everyone's in frame, and we're kind of various levels of injured.
This is where it's like, we are missing a lot in this. That where this, I felt like this is the one episode where they would, and yeah, the technology wasn't really there, but they would have benefited from picking a second location and doing something like, you know, like a, you know, like a Life Pro or something, you know, like a something like that, a GoPro kind of shit.
Very funny that you say that, because that we do that eventually. That is season 3.
Every once in a while, one scene like that of this season could be useful.
But, I mean, I feel like I like
I guess I've never gone so far from, like, reading the novella literally last week to now rewatching this. This does kind of feel like everything within the fucking carriage.
Yes.
Like, basically,
very much.
Here's our climax, and we're just being told about it. And, like, Dan even says, like, hey, Laura's pretty upset right now, so I'm gonna like, do this update. And, like, Laura's back on her bed, and she's kind of almost the... Except for Betty, who's sitting at the very back of the room. Right. Laura is, like, the furthest back in the room. Danny starts us out. So, basically, we all start... It's basically, like, Danny, Perry, Laugh, and Kirsch are kind of the closest to the cameras. So, they're kind of the ones that... So, they're the kind of the ones explaining this. So, Laura and Perry use LaFontaine as a homing beacon. And that led them to some lip of a cavern. And when they got there, Perry staked Will. She then apologizes to Kirsch that she had to do that.
Perry says, oh, well, he kind of had it coming.
Yes. See, I...
this is where I was like, okay, at the end scene, I really liked Kirsch at this point.
Did you notice...
I did also like when they were trying to be like, dude, your friend's a vampire. And he's like, nah, he's cool.
Did you... I think it was in that period. Did you notice that he's wearing a shirt that has underwear on it that says Save the Undies?
Yes, I did notice
okay.
that at one point.
So that was... It was... Maybe, like, around that time, like, a couple, maybe an episode or two before that, one of the executive producers of the show, it was You Buy Kotex. They're, like, a feminine hygiene brand.
Yeah.
So, the way they integrate that is that they have, basically, all of the main cast got recruited to be You Buy Kotex campus ambassadors to Silas. So, they do a series of videos that is, like, feminine hygiene trivia things and all these like goofy videos that they record, but they're all given those black t-shirts with the underwear on it that's to save the undies. Mm-hmm. So I like that Kirsch just kind of wears that shirt sometimes. No one else does. Just Kirsch. He wears it a couple of times. But I think it's like, it's only in a couple of later episodes. If you look back, there's a box of You by Kotex tampons that moves from either the back of Carmela's bed to the back of Laura's bed. So it's like, but I just like that he's just like, yeah, here's a free shirt I got.
Yeah, like, it has women's underwear on it.
Like, yeah, I'm totally cool with selling tampons to all the chicks on campus. And I love you, Kirsch. So Perry and Laura were, after they went there, they were captured by the vampires. They were thrown into a closet, but Laura was able to send those texts to Danny. There was some sort of light rising from the pit, like, while they're at the lip of it, but this, some sort of huge cat grabbed Laura off of the edge and pulled her back, and then it transformed into Carmilla with a sword. So the Dean attacked when she saw Carmilla, but then she fell into the pit, and Carmilla was able to see within the pit, and after, like, making a joke to Laura, Carmilla then jumped into the pit and stabbed the light with the sword. And then last says that killed the brain parasites because they all returned to normalcy about it instantly. Danny was able
to... the brain worms?
Yeah.
The illithid parasite? No, I'm just sorry. I was going...
Oh, yeah.
Well, with the whole, like, confrontation with the... Sorry.
I've got a lot on my mind as well. Yeah.
Laffy had a lot on their mind and well in it.
So, Danny was able to save Kirsch, so he says that they're now best friends forever. Kirsch then tells him that Laura pushed...
That he needs a new bro.
Yes, he needs a new bro, so he's decided it's Danny. So, Kirsch then says that Laura pushed, like, a giant rock onto the Dean that probably killed her, so, like, Laura saved everyone, and she's like, yeah, I saved all of us, but I couldn't save Carmilla. Then in the final episode, Laura's still filming, but, like, only because Perry thinks it'll be a good way to reach closure. Betty's kind of back in the room, too, but she's, like, really not fucking thrilled about it. Because she got pod people during a campus tour, and she was never even really seriously considering Silas. Uh-huh. She was going to go to Princeton. So she's basically just waiting for a transfer. And she's like, she's such a bitch. She's been, like, really mean about how, like,
Carmilla... No trust in her, and how it's messy. And...
Yeah, yeah, basically of how... Well, it's kind of like how Laura was at the start, but, like, now it's at this, like, Laura's, like, so devastated about her death, and they were, like, definitely in love. So she's, like... incredibly upset about it. So, Laura tells us that she didn't fail out because she did get an A- on her journalism project.
Yeah, I was going to say she had to at least do pretty good on her journalism project. Yeah. I was going to say that at one point.
it's a very, like, I think it's a little bit later. It might be season 2 or 3. But if you look on the bottom of, like, the very first, like, scene where it says what her... Also, I was a journalism major in college, so this is, like, a very specific journalism nerd thing. But it says it's Professor E. Cochran. And so... Like, it was in the era of, like, we could sell papers in, like, the late 1800s. Basically kind of the 1870s through, like, the early 1900s. Of, like, you could sell papers because it was, like, well, we had a girl journalist do this.
Yes.
And one of those girl journalists was Elizabeth Nellie,
Well, she went by Nellie Bly, but her real name was Elizabeth Cochran. And so she, like, did, like, one of hers was she got herself committed to an insane asylum.
Yeah. So I've heard about her.
Yeah. So they reveal later that, like, it is supposed to be, like, a basically Nellie Bly was immortal, and she's now a journalism professor at Zionist. So, or they make some joke that she looks like she's, like, 300 years old or something.
Yeah.
But, like, Lapp was able, had, before JP got crushed, had made a backup of JP, so he's fine. And Laura thinks that they might be dating.
I think this was the time where I really noticed, oh, we are now using, because I think the other time it was like, oh, we might be talking about Lafayette, like, and Perry. And now I was like, oh, no, we are specifically
talking about... Well, because they're always, like, Laugh and Perry was together, yes.
So at first I didn't, and then I was like, oh, no, we're definitely only talking about
And if you really, really focus on it, like, you know, no freaks like I have, Lore is the first one to start using they, them pronouns.
Yeah.
Which I feel like makes sense with everyone in the story, because, like, Lore is definitely the one is, well, I mean, except for Perry, but, like, Perry's having her own, like, queerphobic reasons. But, like...
Right.
So Lore is the most open...
And, like, they specifically treated... Laura is the most equal compared to anyone else, so it would make sense that, you know, she would return the kindness of treating
and it's,
them as the most equal.
I feel like it's I feel like it's an, like it was a detail that was in the novella, which I think only came out in like maybe like 2018 or 2019. It was much later after this, but it's still like basically kind of like was supposed to have taken place at the same time. So, but in that, because it's a lot of, able to do a lot more, it reveals that one of Laura's friends in high school was non-binary. So I feel like that's kind of the thing of, like, if it is 2014 and Laura's... So this is basically, it's not Laura's first exposure to anyone being, well,
right.
Like, having a friend come out as non-binary. She's already had a non-binary friend.
Yeah.
So, like, I liked, like, that. That was, like, the one thing that I felt like it was, like... Mm-hmm. The novella brought, like, a couple fun elements to it, and I thought that was one of the good ones. So, yeah.
You mean the novelization?
Yes, what did I say?
You said the novella.
Novella, yes. Sorry, the novelization.
I was like...
of the web series. Yes, sorry. Okay, so Laura's obviously really upset about Carmilla being dead. But then Perry knocks on her door and tries to, like, warn her. They're like, hey, something crazy is about to happen. So Kirsch and the Zetas were throwing cherry bombs into the pit, and they found Carmilla. So Danny then, like, rushes in carrying Carmilla and lays her on Laura's bed. But she looks dead. But Laura's like, oh, fuck blood. So she goes and she still has blood in the room. Oh, yeah, because Betty
was complaining about it. Yeah.
Poor as the storm milk container. So, like, Laura runs over, gives her some. So Carmilla then wakes up. Like, Laura hugs her very intensely. Perry then is like, okay, get the fuck out of here, Danny. You are not staying for this. So she shuffles Danny out of the room. And they reunite and then kind of make out. And then Laura says to her, so you're a giant black cat, huh? Which... God, I was holding my tongue completely through our novella episode.
We were just
like, maybe it's not Carmilla. And I was like, well, in the web series, like, I didn't want to be like, yes. So,
wait, also, yeah, with that comment, it just made me think of, like, you know, the whole trend going over into, like, black cat girl comment.
No.
Oh, they call it, like, it's really, like, goth women or black cats.
Oh, yeah, that's 100%. Yes, I feel like that probably fits. They make
Carmilla be kind of a golden retriever.
They're very much that couple.
A golden retriever. Jack Russell Terrier. I was like, what's a real tightly wound? And a black cat. So, and then there's a post-credit scene where Carmilla...
Oh, wait, there was a post-credit scene? I missed that.
I fully forgot it. I kind of forgot about it, too. I was just like, oh, I love this.
I was like, oh, credits rolled. Okay. Clicked off the video.
Okay. I actually did forget. I was just like, when I was, like, watching this, I wiped my nose first.
Well, that's stupid for, like, the big combined thing, right? Because, so then when the credits finally rolled, I was like, we're over. You know what I mean? So I wasn't used to watching the credits. So, like, the little bit of time that was left, I was just like, oh, that's all the credits for all the episodes.
I was jamming out to Love Will Have a Sacrifices. So I was, like, just there like, ah. And then I was like, oh, wait, hey, there's a post-credits scene. I forgot the post-credits scene. So Carmilla is, like, basically trying to tell us what happened after she fell in the pit. But then Laugh basically bursts in. And it's like, hey, do we have any idea what happens to a fish god if it eats an ancient, powerful vampire? And I was just like, oh, fuck. We can just, like, leave. Like, we can just leave campus, right? We're like, we don't have to deal with this. And then those town hall alarms that went off when she first posted the video start going off. And that's actually how the season ends.
Okay.
And then I guess very quickly, Brett did watch it because he was with the single videos. There was a Christmas special at the end of this season. So basically, what we found out in that one is that they did all flee campus. They just kind of got lost in, like, the mountains in Austria, though.
Uh-huh.
So they end up at this, like, weird diner. I don't know if I'm going to remember this.
Is Toxic playing?
It was not.
No, that's a Madam Web joke.
So, okay. Why? Why talk? We'll have to do a Madam Web.
2003.
Why would anyone... Whatever. So...
It's so good.
So... So bad. So basically, it seems like they did... Oh, so they were being, like, chased and almost killed by villagers. There's no real reason why the villagers were trying to kill them. Well, like, everything, like, all this crazy shit happened at the campus. So
right.
Basically, like, the Lustig Theater building fell into the pit. There was basically, like, an earthquake. So, but they went and they hide in this diner. So it starts with, like, Laura brought her laptop and she says that she, like, opens it. So she's, like, there in front of it and it's, like, her and Camilla. And they're all wearing Christmas sweaters. I don't know where they got these Christmas sweaters with fling. I don't know. Oh, except for Perry. Perry has a Hanukkah sweater because she's Jewish. So they start, like, doing it. And then, like, this waitress comes out. But she's Austrian. So, like, this is, like, the first time since, like, the first episode we have mentioned that we are in Austria. And it's kind of very funny because, like, it, like, basically when she comes up, it, like, clicks. And then it's, like, we're multi-camera. And it is kind of very funny because, like, Camilla just look around, like, they all look around for a second, like, what the fuck? So, like, but, so it's basically, this woman, like, kind of says she's Mrs. Claus, but she's also, like, evil.
Definitely evil.
So there's all these, like, gingerbread cookies all over the place, so they keep eating these gingerbread, so she's trying.
Was it when they bit the first gingerbread cookie, like, it, like, all of a sudden gingerbread cookie, they're, like, blood? Where the bite marks are?
Yes, yeah. So she's trying to turn
them. Pouring out, like, icing, like blood made of icing on the gingerbread cookies.
Yeah, like the fucking, what is this? Gingy from,
Yes, like that. Very much. So basically we find out that this Mrs. Claus is trying to turn them all, having them eat too much gingerbread, because Laugh keeps saying that they keep eating and they can't stop.
Was it the weird, like, staticky jump scare in the beginning of the episode, too?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of, God, I didn't worry anything about this. I forgot that this one even existed. So, and basically, this evil Mrs. Claus is trying to turn them into gingerbread cookies so she can then eat them. This is apparently the purpose of this diner existing in the middle of the Austrian mountains.
More Krampus vibes.
Yes, a little Krampus vibe. So, but while they're all, like, freaking out about this, and, like, Laura's, like, trying to, like, fucking reason with this, like, evil Mrs. Claus, Camilla just fucking kills her. The villagers that were chasing them, presume, getting closer to the dino, saw that Camilla just, like, fucking murdered this woman. So then they leave them alone. So then it basically ends when they're just like, well, I guess we're spending Christmas / Hanukkah here in this weird-ass diner.
Yeah.
And that's basically how the Christmas special ends.
All right.
It's very goofy. Also, like, I don't even know if they announced there was going to be a Christmas special. They literally might have just dropped it.
Yeah.
Saying, like, nothing. Like... Oh no! I think Laura had posted some stuff on Tumblr that they of them like fleeing, and then there was that. And that was it. Throw of all thoughts.
This was very weird.
Yeah,
I mean, it was fun.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it wasn't my favorite thing.
No, it's fine.
I will say, but like, hate it either. Like, it was something that if I was watching it fully on my own, I would have given up before it got to the point where I started to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, like, that's definitely what would have happened.
Especially back then, we had other shows.
No, honestly, back then, if I had watched it, like, as it was coming out, and I was on Tumblr at the, like, which I was on Tumblr at the time, like, if I had been involved with that stuff, I probably would have really liked it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, now coming back to it, because I think it's something that's very of its era.
Yes.
That, like, it worked because it was doing interesting stuff with the media at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That just isn't, like, doesn't translate as well now. So I feel like if I was into it while it was premiering, while it was, like, this hype and people were analyzing it and stuff, I would have really loved it.
Yes.
Like, I would have been able to finally, you know, get rid of any of the cringe and go past
mm-hmm.
it. But, like, now coming back to just, like, watch it.
Yes.
First of all, it does feel dated. It feels like a,
like
a 2014, like, period piece.
Yes.
Like, it feels very 2014. And also, like, I get why it was slow at the beginning, but I think that those first, which especially because they were like, what, like 3 to 5 minute episodes? Sometimes 6, 7-ish?
3 to 7 is the most we get to in this season.
Yeah. So like, you have to think like those first 30 minutes where like, those first 30 minutes I really struggled with. Once we got to like an hour, I was like, okay, I'm invested now.
Yeah.
But like the first 30 minutes, that's like 6 to 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's a lot to continue to go back to. Though, like, the first 6 premiered by themselves. So not as many weeks. Like, about 5 weeks, probably. That's still a lot to go back to, like, really get into it. And so,
and
I do think, like, without, like, the community and the way that it was posted, it It comes off a lot differently.
Yeah. No, I wasn't thinking that because the link I sent you guys, it was like, what, 2026 minutes of like the first season without like all the intro and outro stuff. And like, it's very weird to think of it. Like, I was like, oh, right. Yeah, I guess it is like 2 hours. Like, that's a movie. That's basically like a movie length. And to think of it being like only a movie length when this like fully like consumed like everything I was doing on the internet for like, for months, like, like, for almost 6 months, like, this, like, I was one of those people who was freaking out on Tumblr being like, fuck, I'm gonna have to somehow get away from my family's Thanksgiving so I can watch the next episode.
Yeah.
And, like, and it was constant, like, even after every episode, like, even nothing would be, sometimes there would sporadically be something posted between the Tuesday and the Thursday episode, like, but not really, but, like, there was always something. So, like, it was such a constant thing, and it was, like, so, I feel like the fan experience of this, like, I don't know if this still has, like, I don't know if this comes up in, like, list of, like, if, because when I was, like, a queer at this time, like, you know, I would go, like, you know, like, best queer TV shows, and then, like, see what comes up, and then I would just watch those, and, like, and I don't know if this comes up on this. I've been one of the queer groups at the school that I work at, and so I kind of want to ask the current teenagers, I was like, have any of you heard of this?
I doubt.
Because I doubt they have, because, like, I think it's because it was, like, it was such a...
It's so of its time.
It was so of its time.
And what excuses the things that make it hard to watch as a binge was the community experience that...
Oh, yeah.
Right, like, that's...
And it's kind of a lot. Like, Laura's a lot. She, like, that's the whole...
But, and also, you were only meant to watch it for 5 minutes at a time.
So you watch Laura for 3 minutes, and then you don't gotta watch her enough for 2 days, and then you watch her for 5 minutes, and then you don't gotta watch her again for, like, another 5 days.
Right.
So, like...
So, it would be a lot more spread out in that way, rather than, you know, sitting down for a like, good-length movie and watching it. It's very different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, I didn't... Well, because my wife was like, well, what if they hate it? Like, do you think they're actually going to watch it? And I was like, they better still fucking watch it. Do you know how many fucking Star Wars cartoons and books I've, like, consumed?
Bad Batch season 3 just started.
I was going to say Bad Batch specifically what I said. Like, I watch all of the first season of Bad Batch for this fucking podcast. Like,
no, I was going to, I would never, no, if we've decided to do something, no matter how much I don't like it.
Yes, I was like, they're going to do it.
And at first I was afraid. I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to say I hated this. I was afraid in the first 30 minutes.
No, I was perfectly fine with you guys coming
like,
and saying you hated it. Because, I mean, I was really surprised even, like, the novella, because I really don't kind of like the novella.
I loved the novella, yeah.
It was, see, which is very funny, because coming, I know it's cringe, I know it's bad, but, like, I still really love this. Like, I was some points where I was just like, oh, God, this is so cringe. Especially the sexy montage. I feel like that comes off in Carmilla, and not Carmilla, Laura in the first couple of episodes, especially in the first episode. I feel like she comes off so annoying.
She, early on, she was giving me Rachel Berry vibes.
Yes, yes, that is what everyone said at the time, yeah, that she was like that, but then... But, like, but the thing of, like, maybe...
Glee, like, Leah...
I didn't watch Glee.
Oh, my God!
Leah Thomas?
No, Leah Michelle. I mean,
Leah Michelle.
Leah Michelle. She can't read. The person who everyone joked she couldn't read. Yeah, that was that. Who? Her from Glee.
Yes, but, Leah Thomas is the swimmer. So, God, what was I about to say? Oh, but, like, maybe it was I am just biased. We'll wait a bit. We don't have to do it anytime soon. But if we do the later seasons, like...
Well, I think definitely Vampire Month.
It will always be April.
Yeah, like March-ish.
That was the first reason. But, like, I do kind of find it that, like, looking back on this stuff, like, there's so many, like...
I feel like we're just going to be talking about vampires for a good chunk.
No, I can distract us because the Fallout show comes out in April.
Oh, yes, yes. We will have to at least take a break for
May will at least have to do the Fallout show.
So, but, like, I feel like there were so many, like, instances in this first season that I do find Elise Bauman, who plays Laura, incredibly cringe. But, like, there were episodes in season 2 that, I probably watched them... I mean, Brett knows from the dun-dun-dun noise. I probably watched them 100 times, and I still cry at, like, how good she is in them. And, and I mean, that's what I even thought of, like, in, I know it's, like, a quick moment at the end of, like, but Carmilla died. Like, I find that she's really good in that. I feel like she's very good in these last, like, 3 episodes. She does the emotional level. And she gets so much beyond that in the next couple of seasons. But, like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like, I feel like this show...
I mean, I feel like it does definitely make sense that these were people's first actual acting roles where they were, you know, voice lines.
Well, it's the thing of, like, you know, they got cast in this it was either maybe some of them had to choose between this or like semi-professional, like community-esque theater. Yes. Like, they were all pretty recent drama school graduates. Like,
right, right. Like, it's not like bad. But yeah, there are definitely moments where you're like, oh, these are new actors.
Yes.
These are new in the scene and the ideal. Oh, and like the right. That are still like learning stuff. So I don't like think that necessarily makes it bad. I just, at the beginning, I was not vibing with it. And then I did start to like it. And then by the point like where we were finishing out the end, I was actually enjoying it. So yeah. It was like, it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely was not something I would have ever watched on my own.
No.
Even if like you were like, you should watch this, I would have started and been like, yeah, sorry, I couldn't.
No, I never even bothered suggesting yes. this to you. Yeah, because like I've tried to get other people into this before, and last I said, my wife got 3 episodes in and was like, no, I'm not doing this. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fine. I was like, because I told you guys it was cringe, and I feel like I've been like, it was very of a moment. And if you weren't in that moment, I can see thinking like, this is fucking horrible. Why did anyone ever like this? And I was like, okay, but you got to understand what the moment was. There was a moment, and it, like that moment is what made it so great. And I feel like that's why I still kind of love it.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that.
Feel that?
Yeah.
Feel that with, you know, games and shows?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
I've definitely liked shit that I like. This probably isn't very good, but I'm just having a fun time right now. I mean, fucking, I love fucking Imperial or fucking Republic Commandos.
Oh, yeah.
It's not good. I hate those books, but I love that fight fandom.
And argue. Kingdom Hearts. I love Kingdom Hearts, but I will not lie and say, like, it's flawless.
Well, see, that's the same thing. Like, yeah, you love Kingdom Hearts. You're not going to tell Caleb, like, you have to play Kingdom Hearts
because
you're like,
I don't want him to because he's literally sat next to me the entire time when we were playing 3. He's like, why do they have all those zippers and buckles? Like, it's part of the fashion.
I just fucking made fun of it the whole time. He was pissed.
Like, enjoying my crappy Final Fantasy with Disney characters, okay?
All right, so what are we doing next week for Vampire Month?
Next week, I'm getting my tits chopped off. So.
Oh, right. So doing, well, next week in recording. Next, yes. Next for an episode that will be coming.
Yeah.
Okay, so for our next episode after this, though, we're going to talk about Castlevania, the TV
season
show.
Season 1 and 2, yes.
Season 1 and 2.
On Netflix.
On Netflix.
I will send you the specific one. We're not watching Nocturne. That is a different series.
Just Castlevania.
So if I just search Castlevania on Netflix, I will get... Okay.
Nocturne might come up pretty soon because that was the newest one to premiere, but you're not going to do any of the...
Just Castlevania Season 1 and 2.
I want to watch my bisexual panic show. They're all hot.
All right, so I guess if you have anything to say about Camilla the Novella, the web series, Queer Vampires...
If you've ever heard of Camilla the web series, that's
Yes, actually, if you were also someone with me on Tumblr being this gay, or if you never fucking heard of this shit before, also fully understandable, we are hyperfanpod at gmail.com and hyperfanpod on Twitter and Tumblr. All right, so we will see all of you a week after this talking about the Castlevania TV show season 1 and 2.
Hi, see ya.
It's also called Oops All Lancers.
Kawashi. Bye. 'Cause piss. Something just fell over. I'm gonna go check on what he just knocked over. So, and then
Marika,
what?
Your glass is like perfectly.
Oh,
halfway.
Jesus Christ.
I just was looking at it, and I was like, it looks stable, but it looks like it shouldn't be. It was literally like that.
Yeah, I was like teetering on the edge of the bookcase. Okay, thank you.
Physics. Thank goodness there wasn't a cat in here.
Or Jane is dead. So I guess dramatic pause there, because I want to get back to the trick.
Okay.
And then Laura continues, we won, and Laura is dead.
Camilla's dead.
And then Laura continues.
Did you type it like that, or did you just?
No, wait. What? So just pause for a second. So,
bacterial meningitis is scarier to me. I'm gonna go. Well, because it comes on like a cold.
True.
It comes on like a cold. Your body thinks it's a cold. The only other symptom is that you might have neck pain, and if not, you might just die anyway. You might not have any symptoms other than like a cold or flu.
I feel like we should have a sound effects and be like, and that's Cal's health corner.